Thank you very much. We'd like to welcome all of you today, and we are thankful to the Dwight Township High School for allowing us to host the COGFA committee meeting here today. I'd like to call the meeting to order. The purpose of this meeting is the State Facility Closure Act hearing on Dwight Correctional Center. I'd like to stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance, please. Thank you very much. My name is State Representative Patty Bellock. I'm the co-chair of the COGFA committee, and Senator Jeff Schoenberg could not be here today, so I'll be moderating the meeting. And the members of the COGFA commission that are here today are Representative Raymond Poe, Senator Denny Trotter, and myself. We have other elected officials who are here today who are up on this panel. I'd like to introduce them also. We have Senator Shane Cultra, Senator of the 53rd District, Senator Toy Hutchinson, I'm not sure if she's here yet or not, Representative Jason Barrickman, Representative of the 105th District, Representative Frank Martino, Representative of the 76th District, Representative Pam Roth, Representative of the 75th District. Thank you all of you for coming today. We hope to give everybody a fair hearing, and so after the governor's panel, we will ask people to limit their time. We will have timers on the table, and the only reason we do that is so that everybody that has signed up to be heard can get to be heard. We had a lot of people in the last hearing. We've been in 4 or 5 hours of hearings already this morning, and so our main point is so that everybody can be heard. The first panel will be the State of Illinois Executive Branch Officials, the Illinois Department of Corrections, S.A. Godinez, Director, Brian Gleckler, Chief Financial Officer, Ann McElroy, Chief of Labor Relations. And then the second part of that panel will be the Governor's Office of Budget and Management, Austin Beda, Associate Director. We would ask you to state your name before your testimony, please. Welcome today.
Thanks. Good afternoon, Chairman Bellock, members of the Commission. My name is Austin Beda, and I am an Associate Director in the Governor's Office of Management and Budget. I am here today to discuss the proposed closure of Dwight Correctional Center. This closure and the other closures and consolidations proposed in the fiscal year 13 budget are difficult. They impact every region in our state. They impact people's lives and people's jobs. They impact those whose lives have been affected by the actions of the women housed at this facility. These decisions are difficult, but they are necessary. The budget office has the responsibility to manage the state's resources, which, as everyone is aware, are limited. The growing costs of pensions and Medicaid now make up 39% of state general revenue spending. That's $13.2 billion. If major changes are not made in these areas, more services and programs will need to be reduced. We call this the squeeze. For fiscal year 13, the governor introduced a GRF budget of $33.9 billion. This includes a 9.2% reduction in the budget for the Department of Corrections. Last week, the Illinois House signaled that it wants to cut an additional $14.2 million from public safety. This would result in even deeper cuts to the department than proposed in the governor's budget. In the face of budget reality, the proposed closure of Dwight makes financial sense. We have worked closely with the Department of Corrections to identify efficiencies in order to manage the budget. Admissions of female prisoners has dropped 41% since 2005 to 2,809 women. Only 188 of these women are deemed maximum security. Over 75% of these women have been convicted of nonviolent crimes. The size and layout of this antiquated facility makes operating a multi-class prison inefficient. In addition, Dwight Correctional Center, which opened in 1930, needs major repairs. $18.2 million of capital to assure the viability of the facility, of which $6 million is immediately necessary. I'd like to turn it over now to Director Godinez, who can provide more specifics to you. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, honorable members of the Commission, and distinguished legislators. For the record, my name is Tony Godinez. I am the Director of the Illinois Department of Corrections. As Mr. Bates has mentioned, the department faces nearly a $112 million funding cut for fiscal year 13. With approximately 86% of the department's budget spent on operating facilities and faced with the possibility that we will see even more legislative appropriation cuts than the governor's introduced budget, it is the unfortunate reality that among other cuts, facilities must close and some employees must be affected. I truly recognize the local economic impact and the strain to employees and their families when looking at all our options in closing facilities. We try our best to keep the impact of families and communities to a minimum. However, paramount of all concerns when choosing a facility to close is maintaining the public safety and the safety of my staff and the inmates. Along with various safety concerns, my goal is to provide a correctional environment that better prepares our offenders for reentry into society. The decision to close Dwight is based not only on the cost savings to the department, roughly $37 million annually after fiscal year 13, but also on sound public policy that female offenders can be managed in a more efficient manner without compromising rehabilitative programs. The female population has been changing. As we've been told, we have seen a 41% reduction in new female admissions since 2005. Due to the nature of this changing population, by combining the female populations at Dwight and Lincoln into one facility, the department looks to achieve some economies of scale regarding the female-centered services and facilities. As the department incorporates some of its population control measures, including a community-based model of electronic detention for low-level minimum security inmates, we will have a richer sense of the reorganization of staff and inmates in the next few months. My career in corrections has now spanned 39 years, and I have either worked in or consulted in over 23 states. My vision for a low-level minimum security offender fits in well with the established correctional industry practice that places an emphasis on a community approach for inmates who are scheduled for shorter stays and minimizes the disruption to the inmate and the inmate's family. Because 71% of our female inmates have 2 years or less remaining on their sentence, a community-based model will be especially beneficial for this population. Over 48% of our female population have less than 1 year from release. According to the Bureau of Justice National Statistics from 2008, approximately 64% of state female prisoners lived with at least one of their children either during the month before or immediately prior to imprisonment. 77% of mothers in state prison who lived with their children immediately prior to incarceration provided most of the children's daily care. That's 77% compared to 26% of male inmates. Research has shown that allowing female inmates an opportunity to maintain their family ties during incarceration can lessen the disruptive active aspects of parental incarceration on children, allow easier reunification of families upon release, and decrease recidivism. This research shows that if we were to move to a community-based model with an emphasis on programming, we can start to make some progress to prevent the vicious cycle of incarceration inherited from generation to generation. Shifting the female population from Dwight and Lincoln Correctional Centers to the Logan Correctional Center enables the Women and Family Services Division to operate more efficiently as the female population will be in a singular, centralized geographical location. Also, an added benefit of having a central location is that the new central location will allow greater opportunity for family visits from all regions of the state. Current programs which exist at Dwight will be replicated at Logan Correctional Center. Logan has the capacity to house the unique populations of Dwight, the reception center, the critically mentally ill, the chronically medically infirm, a multi-level security, and the protective custody unit. Dwight is comprised of several older buildings and systems that require imminent repair. The department has identified $18.2 million in repair. Of that number, approximately $6 million in repair work is needed for Dwight Correctional Center to remain open and operational. In closing, given the department's projected funds available the next fiscal year, I see this time as an opportunity to provide meaningful change in the way we supervise our female inmates. I respectfully ask the Commission and your colleagues in the General Assembly to join me in embracing this as an opportunity to provide sound public policy change to the state's criminal justice system during these tough fiscal times. Thank you, and I invite any questions the Commission and legislators may have.
Thank you very much. I just have a comment before I open it up. Is there any more testimony from the panel? Thank you. I would just, again, welcome all of you here today. Thank you for joining us. And we know that this can sometimes be an emotional or contentious issue, but we ask that you maintain the proper decorum that we would have in the Capitol also, since we've brought this committee hearing to your hometown. Thank you. Again, it's open for questions now for many legislators. Thank you. Senator Coulter.
Thank you. Lincoln and Decatur are dorm-style living areas. You have your own admission here, 188 violent female prisoners. How are you going to segregate them?
We have a next building in Logan now that houses 480 inmates. We will take a section of that to house the maximum security inmates.
All right. Dwight has a mental health unit. Have you made plans for that?
Yes, sir.
And what are they?
One of the buildings will be designated for mental health placement.
And have you figured the cost that it's going to be associated with converting those over?
Yes, I think Brian can give you the exact figure.
Yeah, Logan Correctional Center currently houses almost 2,000 male offenders, and with this conversion, we've estimated approximately $524,000 in conversion costs that will be necessary, some window repairs and cell front modifications that will be needed in order to accommodate the mental health and the segregation population.
All right, and that includes the segregation, I mean the violent inmates, you're only going to figure 500,000?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, you want to close Fox Valley and Dwight. Will there actually be enough overall women's space closing two facilities?
Yes, we'll have the Dwight facility was functioning at just above 85% occupancy. There's 1,220 beds at Dwight. We have 956 women.
Okay. Now, in TAMS, you say you're moving the population north, closer, to Cook County, or where a lot of these inmates come from. But in Dwight, you're moving them south. I mean, how do you
I believe
account that for that? And you're moving them away from Cook County.
Well, that raises two points, if you don't mind. The TAMS people will be moved to either the Pontiac facility, and some may go to Menard facility. None will go north of there. The female population, I believe the figures are 37% are actually from Cook County, 38% are, and I may have it backwards, 38% are from Central Illinois. If you take Cook County and the collar counties that are placed at Dwight, it's 50%. It's kind of misleading because in that Dwight population is the reception center where everybody goes to when they're first committed out of North.
Right, and that's another thing. I mean, all female inmates go to Dwight and are processed. What's it going to cost to set Logan up to do this same thing?
It's within that $500,000 cost, the conversion of one of the buildings to a reception center.
Can you pull the microphone closer to you? We're having trouble hearing you, please.
Right. And right now, it's estimated that the total prison system is at 150% of capacity. So, I mean, I can't see how you can justify closing any prisons in this state.
Again, I would ask that the proper decorum be held.
Do you have a response to that?
Yes, sir. I didn't know if you wanted a response. The That is a harsh reality. Given $112 million less than what I would be asking for, I have no other choice.
So does that mean then we're just going to open it up to more lawsuits like what's happening in California?
I can't answer that, sir.
But it's a very, it's a likelihood that when you start cramming a population and more population in a smaller area, that you're opening yourself up to lawsuits.
Our population from our projected figures is 2% less than what we had projected. Our population is 1,000 less than where we were last year at this time.
I mean, right now, I think at Dwight, the ratio was staff to inmates is about 7 or 8 to 1. With this closing, it looks like to me it's going to be about 15 to 1. What do you have to say about that?
It is not going to be 15 to 1 because we are combining the Lincoln population with the Dwight population, which fits into the Logan facility.
So what will the population ratio to staff be then if it's not 15 to 1?
It'll be, I mean, Logan currently has approximately 2,000 inmates. Once this conversion is complete, they will have approximately 2,000 inmates with the same staffing level or slightly increased staffing level from where they are at today.
All right, thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Poe.
Thank you, and glad to see you here with us today and get to the bottom of this, we hope. For the governor's office and the budget, now, the number we're seeing here today, that he has to cut his budget, $112 million, counting the capital cost, retrofitting, whatever, then it's not here, but is it around $88 million you're talking about netting after you spend some money on capital expenditures and some of those kind of things?
The capital budget is separate from the operating budget.
Well, it may be, you know, you always talk about that, but it's all state money. And we're all going to spend it. And so if you're taking it out of one pocket and putting it in another one, I guess I'm just looking at net because if it costs somewhere else, in other words, you're diverting funds. So I get, well, what's the capital budget doing? I can subtract too if that's what we need to do.
On the capital budget, what we mentioned was to get Dwight up to be long-term viable, it's going to take $18.2 million. If we don't use that money for Dwight, then we can use that money for repair and maintenance in other buildings across the state.
But we're talking about the whole state. When you're talking about the $112 million, you're not saving that all out of Dwight. We're talking about it around the whole state, right?
Well, on the corrections operating budget that
right.
comes out of GRF.
So what's it going to cost us? And you're from the governor's office. You got to look at the whole state,
mm-hmm.
not just Dwight. What is going to be the total cost? It's not going to be $500,000 to close down this and retro up and go. We're going to have to make a lot of changes around the state. Maybe the budget guy can what you're going to spend totally to make all these recommendations so we can handle these people at other prisons. How are we going to do that?
You mean to accommodate the prisoners that are impacted, that will be transferred
right.
due to these
And I'm not talking about just the Dwight. I'm talking about all of them.
With the TAMS closure,
right.
the facilities at Pontiac and Menard already house maximum security inmates and have segregation inmates that will be housed similarly, where the TAMS inmates will be housed similarly but separated. We don't anticipate any renovation cost to move the TAMS inmates. For the Logan conversion, we do anticipate approximately $524,000 in conversion costs to prepare the facility for the mental health and the segregation females that will be coming from the white. That's all we're assuming in this budget related to the closure of the facility.
So when we get done doing the statewide, we're going to all these hearings. How many less employees will we have after this is all converted? There's layoffs. How many less employees will we have at the end of the day? statewide, not just this facility?
We anticipate, if we go through with the closures to meet the budget targets, that our statewide headcount will drop over by over 1,000 people.
1,100? That's the number I keep hearing?
Yep.
Okay, and I guess I'm leading up to what, okay, since you're in the governor's office, how much money a year do we spend trying to create jobs in Illinois? What how many millions of dollars do we spend?
The Department of Commerce and Economic Opportunity.
Everything. What do we spend in the budget? We know and Henry's will be here pretty soon, and we've all heard, but I mean, we know what you spent on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, some of those kind of things. But what do we spend a year trying to create jobs? And the whole point I'm trying to make is, actually, I don't care if it's $100 million, whatever it is, you can't go out and create 1,100 jobs in the state of Illinois for $100 million. You just can't do it. And it's sort of counterproductive. Every one of us as politicians, we go out, we talk, we want to create jobs. And here we are, we're out of the state, we're going to eliminate 1,100. And I guarantee you can't create 1,100 jobs with a $100 million price tag. So this whole exercise is a little counterproductive. On one hand, all we talk about is creating jobs, and here we are parading around the state showing people how we can eliminate jobs. You spend more than $100 million a year? No. I guess with no answer there. Okay, what's it going to cost to keep Dwight up? It's on the historical registry, right? So is that going to cost something to keep that up from here on out? Or does that mean you can't sell it? It's got to stay on the registry. What would be the cost for that over the next few years?
Yeah, I mean, we're anticipating the cost to be approximately $350,000 a year just to keep the facility, to keep the grounds maintained, to keep the enough utilities powering and water flowing through the facility to maintain the condition of the facility.
Now, is the whole facility on that, or is it just part of it, or as far as the historical registry, you know?
I believe just part of the facility. There are buildings that are constructed, that have been constructed more recently, that are not part of the historical registry, like the X-House and some of the buildings that were constructed, I believe, in the late 70s and early 80s. But several of the buildings are part of the registry, yes.
And then just we'll finish it real quick. Now, how many inmates do we have in Illinois? And I know you said 150%. And how many beds do we have?
We have a total beds, including the ATCs, at just around 52,000.
And what, we have 48,000 inmates?
48,307, I believe, this morning.
Where's those empty beds at?
They're all over the state.
Thompson, we have beds that we've never opened?
Right. We have, it doesn't include, the number.
Again, I would ask for the proper decorum, please.
We have empty beds in practically every facility. 20 here, 100 here. There's an empty unit right now at Pontiac. There's an empty unit. There's a single cell unit that could be double celled at Lawrenceville. We have over 1,000 empty beds.
Okay, so, and I guess your goal would be to reduce the population more, and that leads me to another question. Are we going to, your long-range program, are you looking at electronic monitoring to reduce the prison population?
We're looking at electronic detention to further our mission in allowing someone to reenter into society in a much safer manner.
What's that going to cost to institute that program? You got any numbers on that yet?
The average cost, and it varies depending on the type of monitoring device that you utilize. But the average cost per day for every offender that you hook up is $5 per day.
Okay, and then just quickly, what's the cost per inmate in Dwight?
The cost per inmate at Dwight was $34,583 per year.
And where they'll be transferred to, about the same?
Well, that population, along with the Lincoln population, will be combined into Logan. Right now, Logan with the male population, now it's going to increase slightly when you do move the Dwight population there, but with the male population, the Logan per capita cost is approximately $16,100.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Berkman.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Director and staff. Thanks for being here today. I want to explore some of the issues that have come up already in some regard. But let's start maybe with some of these the capital improvements that you have made mention that need to be made both here at Dwight and also at Logan. You have referenced roughly $18.2 million in repairs here that are needed at Dwight, calling $6 million of those immediately necessary. I noticed the $18.2 million in the report to COGFA. Can you show me of that $18.2 million which line items you are calling immediate and necessary?
Yeah, Representative, the wastewater treatment plant upgrades.
Of $4 million.
Right, roof replacement projects, shower repairs, and the fire alarms.
And I presume these are not new issues that have come up. Have these been? How long have these repairs been on your list of capital improvements that you have deemed necessary for Dwight?
Multiple years, absolutely, yeah, several years. And they've gotten to the point where we are receiving violation notices from either the EPA, we have mold issues, we have water coming through the roofs at some of the cottages where we've had to close beds because of the repair needs in some of these units.
Okay, and so while I'm obviously sympathetic to those needs, I guess what I'm failing to understand is the distinction that you've made that some of these repairs are immediate and necessary as if we cannot move forward without making them, yet it sounds as if they've been immediate and necessary for some time and not been made. And so why is it being presented to us as if this decision has to be made because of repairs that we think today are necessary and that I'm hearing have been necessary for years?
If we don't act on some of these projects at Dwight, somebody will come in and act for us. Mm-hmm. We can't continue to neglect some of these serious needs that we have, and that is just an unfortunate reality of the situation. Yes, we have been requesting these projects for many years, but for one reason or the other, they have not yet been taken care of.
Okay, so let me switch gears for a second and talk to those $500,000 in repairs that you've suggested are needed at Logan, which I presume you're classifying as immediate and necessary to transition those inmates from Dwight to Logan.
Right.
Those $500,000 in repairs are necessary for windows and...
Right. It's to make security improvements for the in the units where the mental health and the segregation population will be housed. It's not necessarily normal repair and maintenance or capital improvements needed in the structures themselves. It's based on the population that those units will house once the facility is converted.
Okay, so I mean the COGFA report calls them $524,000 in repairs for replacing windows in the housing unit where the mental health population will be located and installing fresh air intake vents in the housing unit. And I guess I bring this up because as I looked at your report director's report from last year, mm-hmm. when Logan was on the chopping block,
mm-hmm.
you brought then to the attention of COGFA what were called $8.3 million in immediate and necessary capital improvements that needed to be made to Logan.
Right. Right.
And within those, it appears a line item for window replacements was pegged at $4 million.
Right.
But today we're calling it $500,000.
No. You're talking two different projects. Those would be two completely different projects, Representative. The $8.5 million that was reflected in the Logan report would correspond to the $18.2 million that was outlined in the Dwight report. There are capital needs at Logan. There are capital needs at every facility across the state that we have. I mean, we're not trying to say that Logan Correctional Center now all of a sudden does not have capital needs. Absolutely it does.
But so the needs that were necessary at Logan last year that amounted to $8.3 million, have those improvements been made?
Some of them have been made. Some of them are in the process of being made.
What's been made?
The roofing repairs. Some of the roofing repairs have been addressed. Some of them are in process of being addressed. And I believe that was a $1.2 million project. That is the most imminent need at Logan Correctional Center at the present time.
Okay, but that's not in the report for Dwight. That was raised.
But those are repairs that would be needed regardless of this proposal.
Okay, so your report that highlights the $500,000 you're saying is limited to the uniqueness of Dwight in converting Logan to satisfy the Dwight population.
Yes, sir.
So then the obvious question is, what are the capital improvements that are needed at Logan, period, beyond Dwight? Is that the $8.3 million that you outlined last year?
Right. That $8.3 long-term, within the next 5 years, there's $8.3 million worth of projects that need to be addressed at Dwight, which corresponds to the $18.2 million if Dwight were to remain operational over the next 5 years that would need to be addressed at Dwight. Imminently, the biggest project that's needed at Logan Correctional Center is the $1.2 million roofing project at that facility.
So is the $1.2 million roof project and the $500,000 of window and capital improvements, are those dollar amounts included in your budget request for this year?
Well, the $1.2 million is capital, and yes, it is included in that. The $500,000 is general revenue funds. And that is also included in the budget request as well. It's factored into the overall net savings.
Okay, and you and I met the other day, and we talked at some length about optimal staffing levels.
Correct.
And I thought I walked away from that with an understanding, and I reflected on our conversation and realized I was probably more confused afterwards than when we started. No fault of yours.
Okay, thank you.
Explain to me when we talk about the additional costs that are incurred by corrections because of the use of overtime pay, mm-hmm. you explained to me that you had set optimal staffing levels that you believed would reduce some of those overtime costs and reduce the overall expenses within corrections. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So explain to me what that optimal staffing level is. I mean, there's a number, right?
Yes. I believe based on our current operation that the appropriate staffing threshold between where it is cheaper to maintain a staffing level versus paying out overtime to compensate for a shortfall in staff is somewhere between 11,400 and 11,500 staff as an agency.
And today we're somewhere beneath that, 10,000, 10,950, give or take.
Yes.
Okay. So, and then what I heard here today is that the net result of statewide of the prison closures would result in a staffing reduction of 1,100 employees.
Yeah, that's statewide with all the facility closures that are proposed in the budget.
Okay.
For the Department of Corrections with the two prisons and the ATCs, it's just over 700.
Right.
Okay. So 700 of the almost 11,000 that exist today, it would be a reduction.
We're sitting at 11,000 today. The FY13 headcount that we've assumed, assuming these closures, is 10,393, so about 600 staff below where we're sitting right now.
Okay. Which is those jobs that you referenced previously.
Yes.
The overall 1,100, the reducing employment count 1,100 overall. Okay. And then taking that, I guess, again to where I'm going with this, so how does this save us money? Again, if the optimal level is 11,500 and the net effect of all of this is we're down to 10,400, it would appear that we're going in the wrong direction to hit those optimal staffing levels and incur those savings that you've suggested we can incur.
As Austin mentioned, with all of the closures and the reduction of the 700 headcount assumed associated with those closures, that reduces that 11,400 to 11,500 optimal figure by that same amount, because we're then operating fewer facilities. So that makes then the optimal benchmark 10,700 to 10,800 staff as an agency. We're assuming approximately 10,400 staff in this budget, so we're going to be about 300 below what I would consider that optimal level. Today, we're operating 500 below or more and growing below that optimal level. We are making, in this scenario, we would make improvements in getting to that appropriate threshold where it is more most efficient for the agency to operate from a headcount perspective versus overtime.
But your budget for this year does not assume that we will have hit that optimal number.
That is correct.
It assumes something less, just like last year's presumably did.
That is correct.
Okay. Last question, maybe, on the report that has been submitted to us. Section 13 talks about a long-term plan. Although the long-term plan, from my viewpoint, I suppose, is a bit vague as to what those long-term plans are. We've talked about electronic monitoring and some costs associated with electronic monitoring. Have those costs been included again in this year's budget?
Yes, they have.
Okay. So, and what is that? I mean, you mentioned a daily inmate cost, but what's the? How much of this year's budget is requested for the electronic monitoring services?
I can look at and get you that number, Representative. I don't have it with me.
Okay. And
it's under $500,000.
Okay. And one of the concerns that I have is that there's a suggestion of a change in policy as to how we're going to deal with our inmate population, there's at least a suggestion out there that I think it's reasonable to conclude that the governor may reinitiate his early release program, because we're faced with the reality of the numbers that you're providing to us, which is we're at a 150% or whatever the number was capacity, and we're sitting here talking about closing two prisons. If nothing changes, where does that number go? What type of capacity are we going to be at if these prisons are closed?
That's an excellent question. I can only respond by saying that we're 2% under what we projected to be in our population. We assume those new admissions, especially out of Cook County, are going to continue to drop. We're looking at the reentry portion, regardless of what that population is. It's not a population control plan, it's a population management plan. Right now we have 1,200 inmates in the communities through our ATCs. They are working out there. They are going to school. They are going to drug treatment and whatever counseling. We're going to replicate that through an electronic detention process, which is more stringent than the actual ATC supervision.
So, but at some point there becomes a cost to, as you remove the number of facilities and ultimately beds and increase if population levels remain flat, we have an overpopulated prison system for which it appears we're making, the administration here is attempting to make a decision to further overpopulate, potentially aggravate an already aggravated prison population. At what level does that create a concern for the public and a concern for our staffing levels for handling those overpopulated facilities? At some point, I would expect corrections to come to us and say, you can't close this facility because you're going to break what's already there, because you're going to put too many people in those existing facilities. At what point do we hit that? Because it sounds like you're saying we've not hit it today. We're going to further overpopulate. So at what point have we... Is it 175% capacity? Is it 200%?
Well, in my 39 years, I have seen so many prisons built. When numbers grew up, you went and got money to build prisons. Those days are long gone. We have to do what we can do best with the population. Part of it is managing what we can control. I have absolutely no control over what's going to come into our system.
I understand that, but we know what's in there today.
Correct.
And if today we're at 150%, am I setting the right number?
No, I think our own figure is probably 140%, I believe.
Okay. So what happens if, given the population today, what does that number grow to if you shut the two prisons as a result of this? We grow from 140% to what, based on the population today?
I don't have that answer for you, Representative. We are assuming our population has been going down over the course of the last 12 months. We're assuming that number continues to decline. Like the director said, this is certainly is a challenging situation for us. However, given an $112 million reduction, we had to take a look at our operation agency-wide and look for ways to become more efficient within the resources that we have to deal with. This was one of the options that we felt had the least impact on our overall day-to-day agency operations.
Well, and again, maybe I'm not, and then I'll let the others ask some questions, but these numbers, ideal, optimal population levels, for which we're at 140% today, there's some basis to that. There's some basis that suggests in an ideal world, we're no greater than 100% capacity. and we're at 140 today, and we're going to a number that's higher than that tomorrow if this continues the way it's happening. And my question is, those numbers are based on something, and I presume part of what they're based on is what creates a threat to public safety concerns because our prisons are so overpopulated. And what is that number, and where would we be as a result of this decision?
Representative, I think the best analogy that I can give when we start talking about capacity, and I think the 140% figure that you're referencing, you're talking about rated capacity. When the state constructed Thompson Correctional Center, for example, it was built as a single cell facility to house 1,600 single cell inmates. So the rated capacity upon the design of that facility was 1,600. Just like many of these facilities that have been built previously and opened, that they were rated based on that assumption. Over time, we have the agency has double-celled a majority of our beds throughout the system. So if we were to go in and if Thompson were operational and we were to double-cell Thompson, it would have a capacity of 3,200 inmates, yet the rated capacity for that facility would remain 1,600. Does that make it any less secure or any less efficient of a facility? I would argue probably not, and I think the director would agree. As we stand right now, after these closures, given our current population, we still have over 1,000 beds available throughout our system. And I wanted to correct the electronic detention figure I gave you earlier. It's approximately $1.8 million that is assumed for electronic detention. It was higher than what I had given you.
Okay.
Yeah, and for the inmates that will be participating in that electronic detention program, there will be a fee charged to them for them to compensate to help offset some of that cost.
So will we collect that fee? I mean, does your budget assume that we'll collect it?
No, the budget does not assume that we collect it, but we have every intention to do so.
Representative Berrickman, are you finished?
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Senator Trotter.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman. I guess with that lengthy discussion, I guess I got lost a little bit. We're talking about, well, of course, at this meeting about Dwight. Mr. Bates, maybe you can help me here since you know the budget. What is the operating budget for the state of Illinois? Or what have we agreed on for FY13?
The governor proposed a budget of $33.9 billion. The House and Senate agreed on a revenue figure of $33.7 billion.
So we'll go for $33.7 billion. We're talking about an overall budget. What are the three main things or four main things that we pay for out of that $33 billion? What are our obligations, our liabilities, as you guys like to refer to them?
Medicaid and pensions account for 39% of that number. The other big number in there is education, which is in the $9 to $10 billion dollar range.
And public safety. So it'd be if you round it out.
Yep.
Public safety that's there. So the hundreds of millions of dollars sounds little, but $100 million here and $100 million there adds up to some of those billions of dollars that we have to spend.
Yes, sir.
Here in the state. And I heard the director say that part of this closure is because we don't have the dollars to do it, because we have unpaid bills now that we have to pay
about $8 billion.
$8 billion we have to pay before we spend $1, or at least need to pay before we spend any of that dollars out of that, correct?
Yes, sir.
Pension payments, what number is that?
Our pension payment we're going to make this year is $5.1
billion. So that's like $13 billion before we spend another dollar out of this upcoming budget that we have. And there are other liabilities, other things that we have to spend before we spend.
Correct. We have a couple billion more on debt service on previously issued bonds.
That's on debt. That's debt service on capital stuff. In some parts.
And a lot of it's on pension bonds when we didn't make our pension payments.
So that's another $5 billion that has to be spent before we spend a dollar going into next year. Now, you stated that the governor has asked for
$33.9 billion.
The House has cut that budget as of last week by another 14%, correct?
Correct.
And I think all the House members at this table voted to cut the budget another 14%.
It is another $1 billion. Another, it's like $1.2 billion.
So just last Thursday, they cut out another $1.2 billion.
Yes, sir.
Because we have a lot of money, or no money. So now they're talking about $100 million. Where are we going to get $100 million when they just took $1.2 billion out of the budget last week? I heard those questions for the last half an hour as if he knew where the money's coming from. We don't have the money to sustain what he's asking for, correct? Based on the dollars he just voted to take out last Thursday.
Correct, sir.
Okay. Let's go on to other questions, and we'll go on with another panel. But I just wanted to clear that up. That we're not just talking about this facility. We're talking about, as they pointed out, the entire state. We're talking about developmental disability units that also have to be looked at for either closing. We're looking at schools closing, our universities raising tuition, just to reach the number that they took another 14% out last week.
Right, and there's a Medicaid working group that's been getting together for the last month or so trying to find $2.7 billion to cut the
$2.7 billion
from the Medicaid
program. Oh, that must be my meeting on Friday, yeah. Right. So, and there's also a pension group also, how are we going to deal with that as well? So there are things in place, but we're not just talking about the white. We're talking about the viability of the state. So if we could, next question. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Representative Martino.
Thank you, Patty, members of the commission. Director, I have a couple of questions, but also some comments as well. As Senator Trotter knows that we went round and round about Sheridan, to me this is not my first rodeo. When the Sheridan prison was proposed to close, the savings was projected at $29 million, and I spent a couple of years trying to find that $29 million towards the reopen. The savings ended up being a loss of $10 million once we did the transitions, once we paid out the benefits, and there was a human cost higher than that. We had 485 employees who, at the time that the closing, we said they'll be able to find spots throughout the area. That didn't occur. They weren't there, or the budgets didn't allow for increase in the headcount. So what we had was families, some of the folks here in this room, maybe they both worked. Both parents worked there. Ended up moving to Lawrenceville, other spots within the state. when we were finally, of the 12 facilities that closed, the only one ever to reopen was Sheridan. And that was a great day working with corrections, with Henry Bear, with a lot of the people to make that possible, with our budget chairman, Senator Trotter, in order to look in and find a solution to that problem. For the folks here, and my concern is here, I know Dwight, this was my old beer route for about 20 years. My aunt works here in town. So I know the devastation through Sheridan, what happened in that facility. The savings didn't occur, but the other thing that we see here is many of, you know, we're doing 9 writs a day up here going to the city, talking about moving the operations 3 hours south. In there, you've got to send 2 guards, chase cars, operational figures that I think have to be figured in as we look at these facilities. The savings, I just have a tough time, as I said, in the last round, it was supposed to save 29. Not only did we not save 29, but we lost 10. I mean, that's just a stated fact. A lot of the capital construction costs have been there for many years, and some of these things need to do. But at the time that Sheridan was proposed to be closed, you would think that by reading the COGFA report, and I've sat on this panel for over a decade up until the last few years, you would thought Sheridan was going to fall down. The same is true with Logan. And the report for Pontiac said that it should be shuttered immediately. So I know that in structuring to try and justify a very difficult job that you have, and that we all have here, I just can't, I have concerns about the numbers. When we look at the Mr. Berrickman's comments, I respect. When you take a system that when the mandatory good time push was taken out, then the regular good time was taken away, the action there is your levels of inmates have remained higher, and they have up regardless of what the numbers in the study say. The fact is it has remained at that higher level. For state employees, we're down 20,000 employees in the state, not just here, but you know, we're at an all-time low. So when you close out TAMS with its 1,600 beds, when you look at closing 1,900 and moving 1,900 people from here into a system that's overcrowded, it becomes more difficult, more dangerous for the people sitting in this room. So I will work with you to try and find some relief within the structure of this budget. And it's going to be as the Senate budget chairman has said. There's a lot of challenges that are out there, but I do not... As with Sheridan, I don't see how it makes sense to close facilities that are closer to half of the population when you have to transfer them for writs, to say that we're going to find 589 positions, if I read the report correctly, throughout corrections, when just a very short time ago that didn't occur, where once we got into the impact bargaining, the ability to bump will have all of the facilities from IYC to any of the other facilities where there are rights to move, basically crowding out any of those positions. So the numbers of those people get more and more extensive, and the human toll for folks in this room, if it was as it was with Sheridan, were a number of divorces, bankruptcies, those who opted to take their retirements and some split homes. So that's from the employees' side. Most of the inmates, or a good portion of them, are coming from the city. Their families will travel farther, but you will also transport people farther. So I understand that. And as we go forward, I do not believe that the choice of Dwight would be appropriate in the interest of the state, given everything from cost of gas, number of writs that you do, placing a system which is overcrowded at this time at a level that troubles me for the security of the people that I know you're trying to protect as well, your employees. I think it's a bad... I disagree with that choice, and I'll work with you for it, but I will oppose closure on this facility because the history of our closing of these facilities when they did close, the savings never will outweigh the cost to the community, the people, the families from the inmates who will have to travel farther, and your budget itself, because the proposals that you have in place right now are looking towards monitoring, and that hasn't occurred. You're looking towards early release, and nothing has passed from there. So you have some premises that aren't set up. So I have those concerns.
Thank you very much. Representative Roth, and I just want to remind the commissioners that we have close to 50 other people who want to testify.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a few questions just for clarification. Could you give me the statistics again for the population of Dwight? What's the percentage that come from the northern half of Illinois?
If you include Cook, Collar, and North, that figure probably comes to 63%.
So there's about 63% of the women housed in Dwight that are from the Cook County suburban area?
I'm sorry, say that again. 50%, did you say?
63%?
Yeah, Cook County, Collar Counties, and North.
Okay. And of that percentage, what percentage of those women have children?
Oh, I don't have that number readily available right now. I'll get that to you, though.
I'm going to guess it's pretty high.
Absolutely.
So I guess my point is, why would we move the majority of the population of these women away from their kids? I don't understand why we would move them.
Well, that's a good question. I have faith in the Women's and Family Division. It's a well-running division, a very caring division. The programs that are at Dwight will be replicated at Logan. It's the program itself that helps bring the families together, not just the distance. There are females from way down south that have to go all the way that are away from their families that go to Dwight. This is a central location that also has Decatur nearby, which is a minimum security facility. So the resources of that division are all in one area.
Based at 63% of them, I would say that this is probably more central to the population of this population of women. And also, gas isn't getting any cheaper, and it's not going to get any cheaper. So it's going to be harder for these children to see their mothers, and that concerns me greatly. Earlier, you made the comment about the cost of a Dwight prisoner per year was $34,800. Is that right?
$34,583.
$583. You also said then, when you're looking for the cost to house the same prisoner at Logan, you said it's going to be a little bit more, but the number that you threw out wasn't more. It was like $16,000 or something.
No, what I referred to was currently Logan houses approximately 2,000 adult male prisoners.
Okay.
And based on that setup, the current cost per inmate at Logan is $16,100.
Okay, so if this happens, though, it's not going to be the current cost. It's going to be something different than that.
It's going to be slightly. It's going to be slightly higher. That is
slightly
correct.
Higher than 16,000.
Than 16,100.
So what's the cost savings of $16,000? What's the cost savings for that? What makes up that difference between $34,583 and $16,100?
The savings associated with closing Dwight is approximately $27 million in fiscal year 13. If you looking at Logan's proposed budget, the current fiscal year budget for Logan Correctional Center is $31.7 million. Assuming the conversion, the fiscal year 13 budget for Logan Correctional Center is approximately $32.7 million. So it's about $1 million higher at Logan in fiscal 13. To operate Dwight on an annual basis is about $37 million.
So just so I understand, we're going to spend an extra $1 million to house about 1,000 more prisoners, is that right? From Dwight to Logan? And we're going to save 34? I'm sorry, what was the cost of Dwight right now? I have it.
Annually, it's $37 million. Dollars.
Okay, so annually at Dwight, it's $37 million.
Correct.
And we're going to increase the population at Logan.
No, we're not going to increase. The total population at Logan as compared to the number of male inmates that are there today will remain constant.
And those male inmates are going to?
They will be moved to Lincoln Correctional Center and to other facilities throughout our system.
I guess my point is somewhere you're going to increase costs. Are you increasing at Logan, Lincoln? You're only going to increase $1 million and absorb a whole different population of women? Is that?
Yes.
Okay. That doesn't make sense to me, but I'll hear more on this. So you said that there's 1,000 beds available in the state. It's my understanding that we were overpopulated already in our prison system. So where are these 1,000 beds coming from?
Well, it's been brought up before. We're going to do different things that we had not done before.
Is this the
doubling,
gymnasium idea?
Well,
that
doubling
I've heard
of
about?
Segregation beds, the mm-hmm. use of hospital beds, the use of administrative detention beds. There are 1,000 beds out there after the dust settles. That gives us a little bit of wiggle room. I wish we had much more because we have specialty populations that you can't put 500 men in the 500 empty women's beds. I mean, where the classification fits is where you put these individuals. We are going to double people that we have not heretofore doubled. We're going to open a unit in Lawrence that is closed right now. Open up a unit in, I'm sorry, double a unit in Lawrence that's singled right now. Open a unit that we had not opened in Pontiac that will give us. And as we count the beds here and the beds, if I had 25 beds in every unit, I'd have close to 1,000 beds across the state. So that's how we're doing it, and that's where the beds are. The other point is, in our mission, you're concerned about the women and their families. That's our concern as well. They are the first population we're looking at very strongly to put on electronic detention, to reunify these women with their families.
Speaking of electronic detention, I'm assuming, now I'm obviously not in the industry like you are, I'm assuming that takes more parole officers. Is that accurate? If you're going to put more people out, release them and put them on electronic monitoring, don't they have to check in with like a parole officer or somebody periodically?
So the short answer is yes, but we supervise many of our inmates now through an automated system. The lower level parolees, the lower risk parolees are now supervised through an automated system.
So does the new budget for FY13 include an increase in hiring for parole officers to monitor these?
No, it does not. It
so how will these women be?
They will be monitored electronically and will also be part of a parole agent's caseload.
So we're just going to increase their caseload? I mean, from the people I've talked to in that field, they're already overworked.
But we are also have a parole plan where we're looking at discharging people off parole that have shown a good adjustment on parole, which lessens the number of caseloads on parole, which then allows for more to go on electronic detention.
Okay. Couple more questions. So I have the privilege of representing Bourbonnais, and so when I drive over to Bourbonnais, I go past the former Kankakee Women's Center on Route 102. How much do we pay every year for that to be maintained? And why haven't we sold it? I mean, there's general revenue.
Actually, we don't own the facility at Kankakee. It's actually, we lease the facility from the Department of Natural Resources There's an adjoining state park with that facility. But, I mean, yes, I don't have the cost for you, Representative. We do still pay upkeep costs at that facility. The lease with between the department and Department of Natural Resources expires at the end of this calendar year.
I assume we're not renewing it?
I would hope not.
Just checking. And then you said that to maintain Dwight, because it's on the historical register, it's about $300,000 a year?
Yes.
So there's no option to sell that, right, if we were to close it?
It's my understanding, Representative, based on the way that the property was either deeded or willed to the state of Illinois, that there was only one intended purpose for that facility, and that was to be utilized as a female correctional center. So our options would be very limited.
So that brings up two other questions then. If we can't sell it and we're still paying $300,000 a year, wouldn't the roof still eventually need replaced? Wouldn't we still eventually have to fix some of the $18.2 million in capital? I mean, wouldn't that still be a cost that we'll have to incur in order to maintain it for the National Register of Historic Places?
Yes, it would.
And then can we close it?
I'm sorry?
I mean, can we, because it's on the National Register of Historical Places and the sole purpose of it is for the Dwight Correctional Facility, how can we close that? Somebody brought it to my attention that there's some legalese somewhere that says that we cannot close that facility or use it for anything other than a correctional facility. Is there any truth to that?
I think there's truth to that. It can, if it's going to operate, it has to operate as a female correctional facility. I'm not aware of any thing that would prevent us from closing it, but...
But the bottom line is we'd still have to make those 18, maybe a little less than $18.2 million, but the ones that are immediate, the $6 million, you're probably still going to have to make those capital investments to maintain the facility.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, and then just in regards to the budget woes, and this is, I guess, more directed to Austin. Do you feel that we've exhausted every nook and cranny? I mean, within the GRF budget at 33.7 in revenue, do you feel that we have, I mean, to me, the state budget is an onion, and we have some core functions that we're supposed to do as a state. And over the years, we've added lots and lots to this onion, right? Do you feel that we have exhausted every possible option outside of closing facilities? And outside of the Department of Correction, in terms of saving money for the state? I mean, do you really think that this is, and I guess you probably don't have to answer this, but I mean, to me, does this make the most sense for the residents of our state to make these closures like this? When one of our functions is to protect the residents of the state. And now we're looking at early releases, we're looking at overpopulated prisons, because I, as a representative, not only to represent the people that are out on the streets, if you will, but I also represent the people that are in these facilities. And if we're going to start talking about putting them in hospital beds and gymnasiums I've heard about and all these other things, I mean, what's the quality of life there as well? So I just feel that have we gone through line by line and figured out, you know, do we really need to give this agency any money at all? Is it a core function of what we do as a state of Illinois?
Well, I can assure you that we have been going through and are going through the state budget line by line, trying to find every dollar possible. Since the governor's been in office, we've consolidated over 1 million square feet of leased office space, which has saved state taxpayers over $30 million since the governor's been in office. And we've gone through in offices and done a printer consolidation. Whereas everyone used to have their own printer in every office, which happened to be a different type of printer, which needed a different cartridge, which was incredibly inefficient, and have consolidated that to a multi-purpose copier in most offices. We're going through our operations trying to figure out where we can squeeze every dollar possible. Have we found it all yet? No, but that doesn't mean we haven't stopped working on that. They also point out that we have this big stack of unpaid bills, and that's hanging over us. So the incentive is there to save every dollar possible so that we can make a dent in those bills.
Right. Just kind of to wrap up, and then I won't take any time later in the agenda, if that's okay. I would just hate to see us balance the budget on the backs of the small communities that these closures affect. And I did a little calculation. For Dwight alone, it's 1.5% of the population would be losing their jobs. That's just for Dwight. There's about 60 people, I think, that are actually from Dwight proper. In the town of Dwight, that works out to about 1.5%. So although 60 jobs sounds like not that much compared to some of the big, but to the people here, it's a big deal. So let's just translate to the 3 million people that live in Chicago. That would be 40,000 jobs being cut. 1.5% is 40,000 jobs. Do you think we'd be sitting here? Do you think we wouldn't be freaking out about that? So that's why you'll see 200 people here tonight. This is really important stuff to us in Dwight, to the people that are affected in the TAM Center, and every other closure that's on that list. I applaud the COGSA group. You guys are saints. I think what you do is phenomenal. I'm glad I don't sit on COGSA because it's a hard task, and I know from personal relationships with some of you that it's a lot of work. But I just hope that we have exhausted every avenue. And I sit on Medicaid, or excuse me, I sit on human service approves as well as education approves in the House, and I know we have a really hard task ahead of us. But I think that there's more avenues that we can go down. And I know that the copier thing seems like some people here are very small, low-hanging fruit, if you will, but those low-hanging fruits pile up, and they add up over time. And so I applaud you in making those small advancements, and I think that there's probably more out there that we could become more efficient. It's time that we think outside the proverbial box of how can we do more with less, and that's where we need to be. I'm not sure closing a facility is the answer to that, because, again, going back to the onion analogy, to me this is one of our core functions. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I just had one comment when you brought up the beds and the 1,000 beds. When we were here in the fall at Logan and you were talking about closing then, you talked about putting people on a permanent basis in gymnasiums and infirmary beds. I hope that is not in this plan.
No, and the big difference is that closing Logan would have had to find, we'd have had to find beds for 2,000 male inmates. Our process now is looking for beds for 1,000 inmates. And if you remember correctly, the gymnasiums were going to add up to, I think, 1,000. That's your 1,000. Mm-hmm.
I guess I just have one other comment coming. Those of us that are on the COGSA Commission came from the closure hearing this morning of Joliet Youth Center. But in the discussion, they mentioned that their numbers have gone down by almost cut in half over the last 5 years. And it's just troubling that it seems as though our numbers haven't gone down at all in the adult population. Have they?
Well, the new admissions have. What hasn't gone down is how many people are discharging or being released. That's why we implemented a population management plan that looks at what causes that number to stay where it's at or not go down. And we looked at how many individuals are doing dead time above and beyond, or beyond their minimum supervised release date. And that's helped tremendously because it's also a management tool. It's totally behavior-based. You don't behave, you don't get this time back. You get this time back, it gets you closer to release.
I guess my only other comment, and then we'll move on, is the concern that Representative Roth brought up about moving those women away from their children to almost twice, if 60% of the population is from up north, you're moving them almost twice as far away from their children.
Yeah, and I want to reiterate, 50% of our women are doing 1 year or less. 71% have 2 years or less. That makes them automatically, the 2 years or under, makes them automatically eligible for electronic detention. We're paring that group down, and we're looking at the women that are the main providers for their family. We're looking at the best possible group that we can safely supervise in the community.
Thank you very much. If there are no other questions from the members of the committee, then thank you very much for your testimony. We really appreciate it. The next panel will be elected officials.
I'll wave my spot.
So Senator Shane Caltra, Representative Jason Berrickman, then Bill Wilkie, Village President, Village of Dwight, Kevin McNamara, Administrator, Village of Dwight, Gary Marks, President, Dwight Fire Protection District, Jimmy Lansford, Mayor, City of Streeter. I'm not sure. We'll stop at Jimmy Lynn. No, you have to go up there. Okay. You can go up there. We'll have another panel of elected officials, too, because we don't have enough chairs. So.
Yeah, okay. Okay. You ready, Patty?
Great. Thank you very much. Please proceed. We'll just start with Senator Coulter.
I would like to thank the commission, my legislative colleagues, and others of the state of Illinois for being here this afternoon. If you look across this gymnasium, you'll see the gravity of the situation. The workers, the families, the citizens of this area are here to show one simple message. Don't close Dwight Correctional Center. One key thing about this hearing versus others that we're from around the state is this is the third time Livingston County has gone through this ordeal. I find myself questioning the rationale behind the Quinn administration decision to take aim at our area again. It's especially hard to see the policy decisions coming from this administration and decipher them from the Blagojevich administration. I don't use this reference lightly, but what we have here is another Blagojevich-era-style policy to shutter a facility without a proper decision-making process or any regard for the committee which hosts the facility, for the community that hosts the facility. Here is what we know about the Illinois Department of Corrections. At minimum, the system is overall 150% of capacity, and the security levels may be in some areas maybe over 200%. We are understaffed, and many facilities have staffing ratios of approximately 15 to 1. The last thing we should be doing is engaging in closing prisons. We should be working to figure out how to get more cadet classes trained, reducing outside contracts with vendors, and getting more DOC lands in production for critical supplies. We've got extra correctional properties that should be sold off, and the capital needs used like warden's homes and hunting lands to sell those things off and use the money to invest in our prisons. Former Director Vaught told the media that it was their goal to close TAMS and get inmates closer to home by putting them in Menard and Pontiac. Could this have something to do with all the inquiries that have been made on behalf of major gang leaders, as was highlighted by Chicago Magazine? By using the former Director Vaught's logic, we should shutter Decatur or Lincoln Correctional Centers? This logic does not make sense. I wish the coherent thoughts from the administration should be shown. I challenge directors and others to show us a long-term plans for our state facilities. My guess is you don't have any plans and are just throwing out ideas and see what sticks to the wall. We as legislators have laid out bills to create facility commissions and are willing to be part of the solution, but you have to set up to the plate and be honest negotiators. Director Vaught, why isn't the governor using what little political capital he has left to make serious dent in our state's real problems like pensions and Medicaid instead of half measures that only amount to a tiny fraction of our state's fiscal nightmare but destroy communities in its path? The hundreds in attendance here today don't have any tolerance for games and double talk. It's way past time to show leadership in solving the state's budget crisis, but this plan is not part of that. I thank you for your time and look forward to addressing you at a later date. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator. We'll move on. The timers are on the table, and so when it goes from yellow to red, then we would ask you to wrap up.
Just me? Thank
sure.
You, madam.
Just please state your name, please. And then.
Bill Wilkie. I'm the village president of the Village of Dwight. And joining me tonight are the village trustees, administrator, the attorney, our clerk, and a treasurer. Once again, the governor has decided to close a prison to save money. First it was Pontiac, then it was Logan 7 months ago. Now it's the Dwight Correctional Center. The village of Dwight has already been through a tornado, losing two car dealerships. R.R. Donnelly cutting about one-third of their workforce, and a threat of closing W.W. Fox Center. These has really hurt. My testimony I was really looking forward to, but then they started running out these figures that I don't coincide with, like my second, Larry's going to show that, but my second one was the nice location of the Dwight Correctional Center, which is an hour and 10 minutes from Cook County, Chicago, just off 55, 45 minutes from Will County. And the additional cost of transporting these people, another hour and 45 minutes, 80 miles to Logan, I can't see where there's supposed to be these savings. These costs will definitely drive up the supposed savings. The children, the women out here, I am told, is a bigger percentage, about 80% come from the Cook County, Chicago area. 75% of these women have babies, and I think it's a real catastrophe to move these people away from where they are, because the suicide rate out there was going up, and they've done things to help these women, and it's went down. To wrap up my testimony, I would like to ask the commission and the governor to reconsider this closing. I realize the impact of Dwight, LaSalle, Livingston, Grundy, Kankakee counties, the impact of families and employees of Dwight Prison, the families, friends of the inmates themselves. This is nothing that could be measured by a spreadsheet and a computer program. It's personal, emotional, and devastating. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. If you could just pass the microphone down. Thank you.
My name is Jimmy Lansford, and I'm the mayor of Streeter. One of the things that many people believe is missing in politics is common sense, and I don't necessarily agree with that since I am an elected official. But once again, it appears that with little or no thought given to its impact on those that will be affected by the decision, it's been proposed by the state of Illinois 2012-2013 budget to close the Dwight Correctional Center. The proposal will result in a staff layoff of 350 employees and relocation of all current female offenders to the Logan Correctional Center near Lincoln, Illinois. To make room for the influx of female offenders at Logan, current male offenders at Logan will have to be relocated to the Lincoln facility. It's true that the Dwight Correctional Center buildings and cottages were first opened in 1930 and are in poor condition. The current building conditions are not the fault of the Dwight community, but the failure of those responsible who over the past decades failed to upgrade and improve the facilities. There may be perceived savings in the closing of Dwight, but what about the economic impact on the community being affected? When all factors are weighed, will the net result be any true savings? According to the Illinois Department of Corrections fiscal 2010 annual report, approximately 60% of incarcerated offenders are from Cook, Kane, Lake, and Will counties. All females, 2,751, were processed through the Dwight facility. The mission of the Illinois Department of Corrections is to protect the public from criminal offenders through a system of incarceration and supervision which securely segregates offenders from society, assures offenders of their constitutional rights, and maintain programs to enhance the success of offenders' reentry into society. Dwight is close geographically to the four counties where 60% of the offenders live. Director Godinez states in his IDOC fiscal year 2000 annual report message, successful reentry is a major focus. Family support is important to the success of programs like Women and Family Services Reunification, Moms and Babies, and Adult Education and Vocational Services. I would encourage the Commission to use whatever influence they may have to convince the General Assembly to not only restore funding for Dwight in next year's fiscal budget, but also encourage funding for remodeling and renovation so that the Dwight facility continue to be used into the future. The June 5, 2010 tornado
caused... Excuse me, please bring your remarks to a close. Thank you.
I'm close.
Okay.
The June 5, 2010 tornado caused millions of dollars in damages to the cities of Dwight and Streeter. We received no help from the federal government. What we did receive was invaluable assistance from the Illinois Department of Transportation and the Illinois Department of Corrections. I would hate to see someone who helped us in our time of need lose their job. In today's economic times, the loss of just one job will have a negative impact on our community. The loss of several jobs could be devastating. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
My name is Bob Russell. I am the mayor of Pontiac, Illinois. As you know, probably it's 20 miles down the road. As soon as the governor made the announcement, many of our residents in the city of Pontiac called me or contacted me in some form or the other. Many of our residents work at the Dwight Correctional Center. Even though it's 20 miles away, Livingston County is a bit of a community. It's not very far. We have doctors that work here. We have correctional officers. We have maintenance staff. In addition, we have lots of businesses that support the correctional officer or the university, the prison. What happens is that the ripple effect becomes devastating to a community, not just the city of Dwight, not just the city of Streeter, but to all of us, the city of Pontiac included. The thing that I've noticed over the years, as the 20 years I've spent on city councils and as mayor, we're part of downstate Illinois. Okay? Every time there's an announcement that we need to cut the state budget, it seems that downstate Illinois bears the brunt of it. The problem is we just went through one of the worst recessions in the history of the U.S., and we're just starting to come out of it. And in our area, we just started to see a little glimpse of hope after going through this. The closing of the Dwight Correctional Center is going to cause all of that hope to be gone. Representative Poe hit a really important fact. We spend tens of thousands of dollars every year in our communities trying to create jobs. And I know that has not been factored into what your decisions are. You know, we're not the state government, we're not the county government, we're municipal government, but it's all still state and people's tax money. And I want you to look really hard at what we spend and what the state spends in trying to create these jobs. We work at creating 10 jobs, and here you're going to, in a drop of a hat, cut 1,100 jobs. I think his was wonderful. The other thing, really quick, the report just came out on how many homeless people we have in this county, Pontiac, Dwight, Streeter area, and it was devastating when I saw the numbers. We have students sleeping in cars and then going to school the next day. We have students that are living on somebody's friend's couch so that they can have a place to stay so they can go to school the next day. This is just going to devastate that. And I want to close. It is my belief that the American family unit, the destruction of that is going to be the destruction of the U.S. And closing this prison just further adds to that devastation. And we're going to destroy our country with the direction we're headed. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your comments. Any of you that would like to provide your testimony, we'd be glad to take it.
I want to submit a resolution also. For
sure.
The
Madam Chair, Senators, Representatives, my name is Gary Marks. I'm President of the Dwight Fire Protection District. On behalf of the Dwight Fire Protection District, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to speak regarding the closing of the Dwight Correctional Facility. The Dwight Fire Department is comprised of volunteer firefighters. They are not paid positions. The Dwight Fire Department provides service to the village of Dwight and surrounding areas in Grundy and Livingston counties. Included in this area is the Dwight Correctional Facility and the Fox Center. We also provide coverage on Interstate 55 and mutual aid to most communities within 20 miles of Dwight. The closing of the Dwight facility would have serious ramifications to the services that we provide. Financially, fire equipment we purchase must meet federal guidelines and is very expensive. We are in need of a new pumper truck. Our old one is 20 years old, and we have to update our radios this year due to a federal mandate. We have not increased our tax levy for the last 3 years, but the probable loss to our tax base due to a closure, a tax increase probably would be in the future. And also, if our response time to fire calls were to change due to a loss of firefighters, our residents could see an increase in their home insurance. Staff-wise, we would lose the heart and soul of our department. six men, approximately 25% of our firefighters, work at the Dwight facility. These men total 88 years of firefighting experience. Four of these men are in leadership positions in our fire department. Our chief, Darren Scholl, is a prime example. He's recognized statewide as a firefighter and leader, has many endorsements, including hazmat, trained in weapons of mass destruction. He's an arson investigator, and on and on. How do you replace men like this in a small town? Finding replacements, volunteers for these six men would be virtually impossible. Also, the cost to provide replacement training would be prohibitive, given that these men do our training now. Lastly, we provide mutual aid and training to many of the smaller communities in our area, and I'm certain that this would suffer also. We're kind of looked at as being a leader in this area, even though we are a volunteer department. So in closing, I would ask that the legislature would reconsider the governor's decision to close the Dwight Correctional Facility and the potential impact to the safety of Dwight and the surrounding communities. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'm Kevin McNamara, the village administrator for the Village of Dwight, and we'd like to welcome you to the community. Thank you for having a hearing here in Dwight, and welcome to the Dwight Township High School. And over the past month, we've been working with Ben Varner almost daily, and he needs a pay raise. He's doing a great job. As a fellow staffer, he told me I'd get 10 minutes if I said that. So, since 1981, to refute some of the things in the recommendation for the closure of Dwight, since 1989, the Village of Dwight has been providing water, backup water, to the correctional center. In the past 3 years, the prison has had numerous problems with their system and begun to rely more heavily on the village for water. We provide, on average, 45 million gallons of water per year to the prison. Here's a place in which the village could help the state cut costs, could help the state save money. In the unrealistic picture painted by the department in their recommendation for closure of Dwight, they discuss the condition of the facility in item number 4. They claim to need $1,350,000 to drill a new well and well house. The Village of Dwight has the capacity and the means to provide 100% of the water, 100% of the correctional center's needs. We do it often. For instance, we've been providing 100% of the correctional center's water since last August, except for 1 week in February when they attempted to go back online unsuccessfully. The state can abandon its wells, receive 100% of their water from the village, and save $1.35 million in costs. Another large item discussed under number 4. Another large item discussed under number 4 is the need to upgrade the prison's wastewater treatment plant at the cost of $4 million. Over the past 2 months, and as recently as yesterday, the village has been meeting with Warden Thompson, members of her facility staff, members from Department of Corrections, along with the Capital Development Board, to look at solutions to the sewer problem at the prison. The state has spent much money over the past few years on its wastewater plant, and instead of fixing it, has been applying Band-Aids. The Village of Dwight is ready and willing to assist the state as needed to get the sewage from the correctional center to our treatment plant. Corrections could get out of both the water and the sewer business. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of this panel? I really appreciate you sticking to the time so that others can give their testimony. Thank you very much. We'll be calling up Glenn Davidson, Alderman, City of Kankakee, Bill Farfield, Chairman Livingston County Board, Dr. Richard Jancic, Dwight Superintendent of Schools, Mark Gentry, Superintendent, Regional Office of Education for DeWitt, Livingston, and McLean Counties, and Irv Mashing, President, Dwight Board of Education. I think all those people can fit. Again, we don't need to be rude with the timer. It's just it allows us to get everybody in because these hearings have been close to 4 hours long on an average basis. Thank you. If you'd like to start, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you. Bill Fairfield, Chairman of Livingston County Board. Dwight Correctional Center has been a part of our county since 1929. It's been a viable employer. It's done very well for us. And right now we're teetering on double-digit unemployment in Livingston County. Our neighbors to the east and to the west are both in double-digit unemployment. This would have a devastating effect on all three counties. I'm not going to go into all the figures that the previous speakers have talked about, but one thing I would ask each one of you up there to support, Department of Corrections said for $524,000 they can do all of the infrastructure work needed at Logan. We're here to save Dwight. We're not here to rebuild Logan. But if that happens, I would ask each one of you to hold them to $524,000 and not let anything be hidden in the capital improvement funds down there. I think that would be a very good step for you. I simply ask you to evaluate the testimony you heard today and make a decision based on that, and I hope that will be to save Dwight Correctional Center. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good evening. I'm Kankakee Alderman Glenn Davidson, and I'm also Correctional Lieutenant Glenn Davidson. I'm in a unique position to understand what Dwight offers to the community and the offenders. Dwight and all DOC facilities gives us public safety. Now, the governor wants to close two maximum security prisons, six ATCs, move 1,000 offenders out on early release, and lay off 200 parole agents at the same time. Now, that's interesting to me because who's going to be watching these offenders? Well, I tell you who's going to be watching them, you and I. As we stand in our houses, we'll be looking out our windows as they're trying to get in. Then there is life of the community around Dwight. I'm just one example of Dwight employees engaged in civic life. We have many others who serve as volunteer firefighters, hold up their churches, pay property taxes to support our schools. If Dwight closes, it's not just a loss of jobs for the 76 Dwight employees who live in Kankakee, Bradley, Bourbonnais. It's a loss of 76 families who contribute in many ways. And let me add that Dwight has the highest percentage of African Americans of any DOC facility except Stateville. African Americans have the highest unemployment. 13% Kankakee County is unemployed. 17% in the city of Kankakee. Those numbers are way too high for unemployment in any city. The city of Kankakee is second in the state to Rockford, Illinois. I've worked at Dwight for 22 years. My wife works there. My son works there. I have other relatives work there. The thought of moving Dwight and all it provides to our offenders, I just don't see it. We're a maximum security prison. We have a great mental health program, a substance abuse program, and programs for children of offenders. We can't risk moving Dwight. We can't risk closing Dwight. So please, give it your greatest thought. Let's not close Dwight.
Thank you very much.
Good evening. Rich Jancic, Superintendent, Dwight Public Schools. Currently, Dwight Public Schools has a student enrollment of 860 and employs 115 people. The schools have continuously performed at or above state and national averages, have tremendous student participation and success in athletic and non-athletic programs, and display school and community pride at all times. The grade school district is currently operating year to year based on a working cash bond. And the high school district is operating in deficit funding this year using reserves to make monthly payroll. This year, the Boards of Education reduced in force 14 staff members and cut nearly $750,000. In most funds, the taxpayers are being taxed to the max, and yet we struggle. As you know, school funding has been significantly cut in the past few years, and that trend is predicted to continue for several more years. Our districts simply cannot continue to lose state and local revenues. The impact of losing the Dwight Correctional Center and its employees would result in a loss of local property taxes, loss of local business, and a loss of general state aid due to the decreased enrollment, which is approximately $300,000 to $500,000 each year. This negative impact would not only be felt immediately, it would reverberate for years to come. It would not only hurt education in Dwight, it would redefine it. More staff would be cut, another 8 to 10 staff members, require larger class sizes, 30 and plus would be the norm, and the current comprehensive programs and experiences for children would be lost. Not that I want any community or school district to face what we are facing, but the fact is, a larger city or school district could absorb hundreds of lost jobs and a 50 to 100 enrollment decrease overnight. The Village of Dwight and the Dwight Public Schools cannot absorb these losses. In closing, I ask that you hear the children as you speak for them, look at their accomplishments as you support them, and lead with the philosophy of always do what's best for kids and not what's convenient for the adults. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. My name is Irv Mashing. I'm here representing the Boards of Education of the Dwight School Districts. I guess that's kind of ironic because I'm here representing the school districts and I wasn't bright enough to have something pre-printed to read. So I'm going to speak from the heart. And frankly, that is, I have seen other communities around this area where because of loss of employment and therefore loss of families, their school districts shrivel up. And when you lose your schools in a community, especially a small community, your towns just basically dry up and go away. That's what happens many times. And what we're here, although the numbers may be small in the overall scheme of things, they are large numbers for Dwight. And if the Dwight Correctional Center closes, not only will those jobs be lost, but also jobs that are reliant on those people that are working here, living here. And in the end, those people have to earn a living for their family. They move away. They take their families with them, and it decreases our school population, which in fact and in theory and in reality reduces our ability to give a good education to our students, which causes more people to move away, and it's a continuing cycle. And if you lose your schools, you lose your town. So I would like to present a resolution from the Boards of Education requesting your consideration to this and to allow the community of Dwight to continue to serve the state of Illinois as we have in the past and to provide excellent facility for the correctional system. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We appreciate that.
Mark Johntry, Regional Superintendent, serving DeWitt, Livingston, and McLean Counties. And I want to thank the honorable members of the commission for the opportunity to speak to you very briefly from both a professional as well as a personal perspective on the potential closure of Dwight Correctional Center. From a professional perspective, I can only reiterate what Superintendent Jancic illustrated in terms of the significant financial impact that it will have on the ability to provide a quality education. If this facility were to close, Dwight school systems would be ground zero, but make no mistake, this would ripple out and impact other similarly sized and small rural school districts that surround Dwight in Livingston, in LaSalle, in Grundy, and in Kankakee counties. It will have an impact because employees are coming from all of those communities. And if they're relocated or lose their jobs and have to move to other regions, it will have an impact on the local school district's ability to provide a quality education if there is lost tax revenue locally. When you return to Springfield in 2 weeks, obviously you're going to be tackling the issue of education funding in the greater part of the overall budget. And we all know that there's going to be limited dollars yet again, combined with the potential reduction in general state aid. What does the transportation funding look like going forward? It just continues to pile up for our local school districts to try to find ways to adequately fund education. So I would encourage you to not close Dwight Correctional Center and give consideration to the impact that it will have on local schools. On a personal note, I am as much concerned about this as anything because I have two nieces and two nephews that go to school here at Dwight, and I'm very concerned for their future educationally. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Trotter has a question.
Thank you very much, Madam Chairman. I guess to our educators, certainly you, at least at this panel, understand probably more than most that we're not just looking at corrections as far as finding savings to try to fill the backfill the hole that we have here in state government. Asking you as educators, as learned individuals, so what is the answer? Because we are, as a matter of fact, going to have to, as I think in the news every day this week, talking about the pension benefits, that there may in fact be a shift to dollars that the state pays, the one of only four states in the country that we pay the actual pensions of teachers in downstate, not in the city of Chicago, but in downstate. But with that knowledge, and also having knowledge and that I've been hearing for the past couple of years, the mantra that the state of Illinois has to do business differently, have to be smart in how we spend our dollars, what is your solutions? I mean, if you don't want us to touch the education system, don't want us to touch this population, where do we get the money with the absence of, unlike federal government, we can't print money?
And I guess my answer to that is, years ago, when the economy was thriving, and I think everybody shared in those gains, but I think right now, and in the last couple of years, and probably moving forward, not everyone is sharing the pains. There are some people that are sharing the pains, but not everybody's sharing the pains.
Well, maybe I'm going to ask you to elaborate on that, because what we're doing is we are sharing the pain, not just with the prison system, but with also our mental health facilities. Why? The main reason why is because, one, we incarcerate people differently now than we did before. Back in the 90s, when we were being tough on crime and not smart on crime, we swept up a lot of people who did not need to be in jail for long term because it was a different model. But we've changed that model, and as a consequence of that, we now do not need these facilities as we before. As the director said earlier, we are going to new technological models of how to watch folks so they can spend time with their families, so they can still get jobs and work and do things. And the same thing with mental health. We no longer give lobotomies. We don't shock treatment people anymore. They're more productive if they're in a home setting. I mean, we know, everyone has said, it's better to be with family instead of keeping them into institutions. So when we are sharing the pain all across the board. So if you know the answer.
And I guess I look at the tax breaks that were mentioned earlier today.
Tax breaks with CME, and let me also say that. CME, right, we wanted to quadruple their taxes. They pay $55 million annually in taxes. We wanted to raise their taxes up to almost $100 million to keep them here. I mean, they said, we don't have to do business here. They said, well, you're going to raise my taxes to $100 million, and we pay $55 million. We pay our taxes. So because we did not want to make hard decisions anyplace else, we was going to tax somebody who pays taxes. So, I mean, that was unfair. So, you know, this whole thing that we gave them a tax break, we just saved them from doing it. It could be a boo, but you have to understand how we operate the state. It is 12 billion people here in the state of Illinois, and out of those dollars we also talked about earlier, we almost $15 billion we owe out already before we even get business started.
Yeah.
But why?
A lot of reasons why, because the world has changed. It's not just Illinois. It's every state. It's a global economy of one of failing dollars. I mean, I'm going to make a big assumption that you read about the European debt and also what's happening around the world. But everybody's doing business differently. But what I have heard out of all the places that I've been is everyone says, cut everybody else, just not me. So when you talk about sharing, then we're talking about cutting everyone.
That's not true.
That is true.
No, that is not true.
Okay. I'm not here to. I don't need to argue with you. I certainly don't need to argue with you. You know, my office is 8704 South Congress.
Sure.
You know, you can call me. You can do whatever. So I'm not going to use this meeting. I'm here to listen to you, but also I want some real suggestions. What are we going to do differently?
Sir, if I could make a suggestion, I deal in the county of Livingston with the budget about daily, and we talk in millions, not billions. In Livingston County, when we bring up a proposal to add to our budget, we bring that proposal up and we vote on it. That's the only proposal that we take action on. And when we sit back and see in Washington and Springfield, when a proposal is brought up and they tack on bill after bill after bill looking for support, that's one reason the state's in the project it is right now.
And I'm going to go. I have chaired appropriations for 17 years, looking at billions of dollars here in the state of Illinois. And what you've said, it's a good sound bite, but that's not true. As pointed out, in the good years, we spent a lot of money. In the good years, we were creating jobs because we were building prisons. But these are not good years. So the thing is as a fellow budget guy, then you know when you don't have the money to spend, you can't build nothing new. You have to cut back.
I realize that, sir. But these are bad times, so why do we still tack on amendments to all these bills that we passed that spend millions of dollars that were not in the original proposal?
Well, that's not true. I mean, again, good soundbite, and I'm going to leave it alone because I guess I'm in a sort of an argumentative
I'm just stating facts.
We like to call it debating, and this is not the place to debate it. But the thing is in the House last week, they cut another $1.2 billion out of the budget. So if we've cut, and you're saying, well, then we have to live within our means, then we have to live now with $1.2 billion less than we had last Wednesday,
right,
according to the budget. So we're living within our means.
Thank you very much. And are there any other questions from any of the people on the panel for this panel?
Could I respond to the senator?
Briefly.
Thank you. I guess what's frustrating to a lot of people in this room is you indicated you've been on the appropriation committee for some time, and that's a difficult job, and I understand that there's some tough decisions that have to be made, but I guess we all wonder how we got to where we are today, being as far in debt as the state is, where the state was supposed to fund and pay for pensions that they didn't contribute to, and now we're at the point where there's really a problem, and it's local communities like this that are paying the price. And I understand it's a difficult decision, but I mean, that's what's frustrating to a lot of the people in the room here. And I understand you're in a tough spot, and we appreciate your work. But that is the point, I think, to us.
I'm certainly not complaining about the spot. I mean, it's something that I wanted to do. I've been a journalist for 24 years in that time. I volunteered to be in this position, and my constituents sent me back because seemingly they believe that I am making some kind of difference in the quality of life that they have, and I have the quality of life of everyone here. And I've said this at other places. Though I live in the city of Chicago, I'm from Cairo, Illinois. So how low do you want to go, not in understanding what's going on in this state? I've been from the bottom to the top of this state, as well as to the east and the west of it, to learn what are the needs of the individuals, of the people of the state of Illinois. So I welcome any of you. If you got an answer for me, give it to me. What I do not like, a guy who works with the numbers, is individuals who haven't looked at the numbers and then want to make sound bites just to be seen and heard in the papers tomorrow. We do have some serious decisions to make. For the local officials here, the local government distributor fund. There's a whole bunch of moving targets we have to look at. I just don't want to simplify it by saying that you're saying we're not doing or looking at things in Springfield, Illinois. That's untrue.
Thank you very much, and thank you for this panel. I'd like to add Senator... I'd like to acknowledge that Senator Sue Resin is here. Next panel is employee organizations, unions, and associations. Thank you very much. I'm going to start Henry Bayer, Executive Director, AFSCME Council.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Nice to see you again. I saw you in Joliet earlier today and members of the committee. Thanks for this opportunity to testify. I am not, you have heard already from the local public officials. You're going to hear from the business community. Right. So you will, they can explain much better than I the devastating impact that the closure of Dwight would have on this community. You're also going to hear from members of our union and other folks who work at Dwight Correctional Center, and you will hear from them about the fine programs that our members are involved in with the inmates at Dwight. So I don't want to talk about that, but I do want to address myself to the remarks that were made by representatives of the governor, which I think are very misleading. They said that, well, this was a difficult decision for the governor to close Dwight and the other 13 facilities. I don't believe that for one moment. This governor last year tried to close 7 facilities, and COGFA held hearings on each one of those 7. And after listening to the governor and the governor's representatives, decided it didn't make good policy sense, and you turned it around, and you saw to it that the money was appropriated and all those 7 facilities stayed open. And did the governor then decide, well, I guess it doesn't make good policy sense, let me figure out how I can keep all these places open? No. What did he do? A month later, he was saying publicly, I'm anxious to sign a tax cut bill for CME and Sears worth over $200 million for those corporations. That money would pay to keep open all 14 facilities, including Dwight. And he gave it away. So he says, well, we're in a box. But who built the box? We didn't build the box. The people in Dwight didn't build the box. The box was built by giving away that money to CME and to Sears, who didn't need it. CME, with their $900 million in profits, they didn't need it. Sears, with their CEO, who makes $10 million a year, $900 million Sears pays to him so he can travel back and forth to his home on the East Coast. And that came out of the taxpayers' hides, and that's why we're talking about the closure of these facilities. So there is no need for these facilities to be closed. Now, Senator Trotter asked a good question. Well, what do we do about it? We obviously need revenue. CME is one place to start. The legislature and the governor asked the members of our union to defer their pay increases because the state had a fiscal crisis, and we agreed to do that. Why doesn't the governor and the General Assembly ask CME to defer its tax break so we can keep Dwight open and every other facility we've talked about? Because this plan of the governor's is going to have an adverse impact not only on Dwight, but think about it for a moment what the department testified to. If they close Dwight and convert Logan, they're going to have 963 inmates from Logan that they won't have room for at Lincoln. Those 963 are going to be dispersed in a system that is already operating at 142% of capacity. In addition to those 963, you're going to have 220 inmates from TAMS who are also going to be put into that population, bringing the rated capacity to over 150%. Now, the department is misleading and saying, well, we have beds. Yes, they have beds. As you know, I was thinking about this morning. Last night, my sister-in-law, my mother-in-law, and my father-in-law, they were all at my house. Do we have beds for them? Yeah. Is our house built for them to live in with us for the whole year? No. Having the bed space doesn't mean that that's the rated capacity. That's not the rated capacity for our house. So this, what we are going to have...
Excuse me for one second. I am going to remind everybody that we expect the decorum that we hold at the Capitol to be held in this gymnasium.
What we are going to have, Madam Chairman and members of the committee, what we are doing, if we allow Dwight to close and TAMS to close and the other facilities, we are increasing the risks of what is already a dangerous, dangerous job. Our members, you know, they make a, they're well compensated. They're not overly compensated, they're well compensated, but the jobs they do are very important and they are very dangerous. And this committee and the General Assembly should not turn its backs on them or on this community. You know, this community housed Dwight. You know, now, because the economy is down, everybody wants a prison. When I came to work for this union, there were like seven facilities in the whole state. Dwight was one of them. Nobody wanted prisons back then when there were plenty of jobs. This community housed this facility long before anybody else wanted a prison. So you should not turn your backs on this community or on this facility. You don't need to. Yes, there is a box, but the box was built. The box can be reconstructed and fixed so we have the money to keep this facility open, to keep Dwight open, and all of the other facilities that the governor is trying to close. And that, I hope, this committee will do what it did last year when it rejected every one of the governor's recommendations because it was bad policy. This is bad policy. Dwight should remain open. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My name is Dan Dunlap. I am president of Ask Me Local 1133. Dwight Correctional Center is not just a place I work, and Dwight is not just the town I live. It is our family. I'm not the only person in this room that feels this way, and it isn't only the people in this room who oppose the closure of Dwight Correctional Center. I want to present to the committee 19,000 signatures on a petition opposing the closure. This area is so strongly united behind Dwight, it took us only 30 days to collect 19,000 signatures. Join us in opposing the announced closure of Dwight Correctional Center, a secure adult female maximum security facility and part of our community. We urge our lawmakers to oppose the announced closure of Dwight Correctional Center and the related cutbacks in vital programs of the state government, which ensure safe and secure prisons, help safeguard and sustain children and families, and assist those with severe disabilities. Such closures, layoffs, and cutbacks add to the ranks of the unemployed and make our community less safe. We call on our legislators to pledge their public support for legislation that will balance the state budget, stop facility closures, halt layoffs, and restore vital services. We also have copies of resolutions calling for Dwight to stay open to present to you, endorsed by county boards, city boards, civic organizations, and fraternal organizations. You're going to hear testimony from my coworkers about the programs at Dwight and about why this closure would hurt inmates and public safety. But I want you to know where this community stands. We stand together behind Dwight Correctional Center staying open. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chairman, my name is Gerald Raines. I'm acting president of IDOC Lodge 263 FOP. And on behalf of the correctional staff and the support staff at Dwight Correctional Center, we, the IDOC FOP, object to the closing of this facility, Dwight. Dwight was built in 1930 and has influenced and impacted the community positively at this time. Being the first women prison in the state, it has been renovated and updated to better care the welfare of the women that is incarcerated there. To close this facility will not only hinder the rehabilitation of women incarcerated, but it will also bring hardship on the employees working there. The community also will suffer because of the loss of employment. People will have to move out of town in order to find work, and this in turn will cause businesses to close. We, the Illinois Department of Corrections, Fraternal Order of Police, would encourage you not to close the facility, especially in a time when the economy is so bad and unemployment is so high. I have a letter here from our state president. President Tistry. I am writing on behalf of over 33,500 law enforcement personnel throughout Illinois who are members of the Illinois Fraternal Police State Lodge. Officer safety is a primary concern of the order. The current considerations to close several facilities, correctional facilities, while at the same time reduce ranks of parole, will greatly increase the risk or harm to law enforcement officers. To be successful, Illinois must have an inclusive and corrupt approach to combating crime and promoting community safety. Each component of this criminal justice system has a critical role in maintaining a lawful society. The Illinois FOP recognized the correctional system as an important part of crime prevention. The Illinois Fraternal Police State Lodge respectfully requests that you continue to work to find alternatives to the suggested plan to increase the ratio of known predators to peace officers. Your support of this issue like this, which provides effective law enforcement in the state of Illinois, is greatly appreciated. Tish Street.
Thank you very much.
Thank you again for the opportunity to address the commission. My name is Robin Best, and I'm here to represent the state employee nurses working in all of our state facilities. I'm not going to go through. We already know Dwight's the only female maximum security prison. We know it's the farthest located north. I'm not going to go into that. I just would like to bring to the commission's attention that Dwight Correctional Center has a state-of-the-art medical facility that is designed to provide care to the pregnant offenders as well as the critically and terminally ill offenders. For years, Dwight has cared for the offenders other facilities could not and have done so without any negative outcomes. Many of the health care providers have been at Dwight for many years and are dedicated to the offenders as well as the state of Illinois in providing quality care to the female inmates. If we move these offenders to Logan, the nurses there are well qualified to take care of the male offenders, but male offenders and female offenders are much different. So those nurses are going to have to be trained to take care of those. I would also like to say, you know, to close state facilities on the backs of state employees. I know we're in a budget crisis, and I know we need to save money. There's no doubt the state of Illinois is in dire shape, and things have to be cut. But there are other ways to do it. And, you know, even as an association, since 2008, INA has offered options in our contract, in legislation, such as in-house registries and ways to cut funding in Illinois Department of Corrections. IDOC refuses to entertain it, so has the legislators refused it. I just think there's ways to do it without doing it on the backs of the employees. So I ask this commission to please reconsider the closure of the Dwight Correctional Center.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. My name is Darren Shull. I'm a major and ISA union rep, shift supervisor for the Dwight Correctional Center. I'd like to take a few minutes to talk to you about some of the ways that shift supervisors, our dietary manager and clinical services supervisor and superintendents have made cuts to improve cost-saving measures while still measuring, while still providing effective security and good quality of life for our offenders. Our shift supervisors have been instrumental in providing excellent service to our administration while acting as a voice for them to the frontline staff, ensure that all staff understand policy and follow policy. We ensure that as overtime posts are no longer needed, the staff is released so that that unnecessary overtime payment is not made. The shift supervisors make every attempt to get mandatory overtime released and use volunteers to keep up morale on those days when mandated overtime happens. At other facilities, there are sometimes one, two, or even three clerical support staff for the shift supervisors. At the Dwight Correctional Center, we have zero. Our shift supervisors also complete detail assignments while still supervising security posts. We complete internal audits, organize the fire safety department, assist in the training academy, wear ear analysis screeners, and more. Our dietary manager has improved the quality and nourishment of meals while still holding down costs to a minimum. Our clinical services supervisor currently is a temporary assigned shift supervisor. At what other facility could you say the shift supervisors are that versatile crossover from the security field to the clinical services field and still ensure that this is completed with extreme detail? Once this closing was announced by the governor, superintendent was asked to assist with the planning for a receiving and classification unit for the move. We do all of this without complaint because we know that it has to be completed. We do not have labor management meetings and complain about our lack of support staff. We do not tell the warden or the director we don't have time to complete projects because we're doing clerical work. We just get it done. When overtime is required to cover shifts for our shift supervisors, we work alternate shifts to keep overtime at a minimum. Our shift supervisors complement our administration. We do this because we care about our facility, our administration, and our frontline staff, and the quality of life for our offenders. Our members of ISEA 2002 are leaders in our community. Like you've heard before, I am the fire chief here for the Dwight Fire Protection District. Our dietary manager is a member of the Livingston County Board. We are deacons in our churches, aldermen, members of the VFW, and people that our community and children respect. But closing this facility could change all that. While your duty is to give your recommendation to the executive branch to either fund or close the Dwight Correctional Center, we would like each of you to understand that Dwight Correctional Center's employees do everything we can to save money, provide quality of life for the offenders, and serve the people of this great state. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
My name's Dale Ridgway. I'm president of Local 501 in Lincoln. I'm not on the list. I talked to Mr. Varner and sent an email, and he put me on the list, which I wanted to testify with my brothers and sisters of the union. Before I begin my remarks, I'd like to say this. Ladies and gentlemen, before I begin my testimony and support to keep Dwight open, I want to apologize to this body of senators and representatives. At the last COFCA hearing, my remarks were a bit abrasive and may have been insensitive to members of this committee at a hearing in Lincoln. For that, I apologize. I assure you, this committee, that my content is vital in keeping Dwight open and other facilities, and I promise you that my delivery will be tamer and calmer, and I won't ask this committee three questions. What I'd like to do is I would like to have 10 minutes, which I'm sure the committee is not going to allow me. So I have prepared documents here of what I was going to say. This little booklet right here, I've carried around for 7 years. This book represents $350,000 of overtime that I have stolen from the State of Corrections and the State of Illinois. Now, how do we get to this problem? Well, 600 correctional officers retired last year, so we didn't fill those positions. But in 5 years, we're going to have 80% of the Department of Corrections retired. Now, I worked in 4 years, 6,000 hours of overtime, and grossed $500,000. That was $264,000 of overtime in 4 years. In 7 years, I worked 7,200 hours of overtime. That's $650,000 I grossed in 7 years. That's $350,000 in overtime. We're just talking about one individual, one old man, 59 years old. A correctional officer trainee starts out at $37,000. In 7 years, it takes a correctional officer to top out at a top salary of around $59,000 or $60,000. That depends on what the governor does as far as the raises and stuff. It may take him 10 years now. But you could hire, for what you paid me in overtime, 10 correctional officer trainees starting out at $37,000 a year and taking them 7 years to top out at their salary. That's 10 officers for IYC Joliet, 10 officers IYC Murfreesboro, 10 correctional officer trainees for TAMS, for the ATC units, and most important, that's 10 correctional officer trainees that you could hire for Dwight Correctional Center. If you go to the Illinois Transparency Accountability website and look from 2008 to 2012, you will see that there have been hundreds and hundreds of officers because you've not filled the overtime and filled the positions. You filled it with mandatory overtime and voluntary overtime. What I propose is... What I propose is that I believe in your committee, but the Department of Corrections can't do it alone. Your committee, and I believe in our executive staff of Henry Bear and his committee, our standing presidents of DDJ and DOC and labor relations, that if we all got together, we could see where you hired people in at entry-level wages, You would save millions and even billions of dollars over the course of time. I urge you, keep Dwight Correctional Center open and all these other facilities that the governor wants to close.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of this panel? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony. We appreciate it. Was Neil Matterson or John Lausinger, were they not here? Oh, you are here? Oh. Okay, do John, Darren Shaw, and Michael Stout want to come up?
Am I by myself? All right. My name is John Luxinger. I'm the chief engineer at Dwight Correctional. And I was asked today to speak about the $18.2 million capital projects that they said would be required to maintain operations at Dwight Correctional. The first thing I want to say is, yes, it is true. Dwight does need a few things. It needs an upgrade in its wastewater treatment plant. According to the EPA standards, currently it's running properly. They're looking at, doing some upgrades. We have an opportunity if we go ahead and build it, to such a degree that the wastewater leaving the plant could be used as irrigation water. There's an 80-acre parcel of property, tillable ground, farm property at the facility, and who knows what the future is going to be. We might need to go back into farming. Energy prices, cost of bringing food in on trucks, it's all getting expensive. We need to change. Everyone needs to think out of the box. Roof replacements. It is true. We do need some roof replacements. You know, a facility can't go 20 years, 25 years without having some sort of, capital program. Dwight, for some reason, was just never receiving. And it's too bad. Dwight's a beautiful facility. And you guys were there today, correct? Yeah. You can see by walking through that facility about the quality of life that the women of Illinois are given when they are put in that facility. When we talk about renovating Unit 12, Unit 14, $2 million, I don't know where these numbers come from. Right now, both those units are fully occupied, run every day. We have, to my knowledge, there is no lawsuits on living conditions at the facility. I think in the entire facility, I think we have three or four down cells. Not bad. I mean, we're way above the average. Shower repairs, that's true. We do need some shower repairs, $150,000. We have an item here, upgrade the fire alarm system for $850,000. Oh, is that me? Yeah, am I done? Do I need to wrap up?
Yes, please.
I just want to say thank you for everybody. I'm glad you were able to come to see Dwight. I know that you can see that when people say it's old and it's run down, that is not true. It is a beautiful facility. It was built by women's organizations in the 30s for a mission to treat Illinois women a certain way and to give them a good quality of life. That mission has not changed, and Dwight will be there, hopefully, for another 50 years, doing the right thing for the women of Illinois. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We appreciate your comments. Senator Breslin was going to make some comments since she wasn't here at the beginning.
Apologize for coming in late. I was at the other end of my district today. Thank you.
Better?
Thank you, Madam Chairman and members of the committee, for the opportunity to speak. I apologize for coming in a little late today. I was at the other end of my district with other meetings as well. I'd like to, first of all, commend the mayor here, who has done an exceptional job of getting out the story of Dwight in the area to the legislators in Springfield. He has told it exceptionally well, and I commend him for it. So thank you for that. I had the opportunity a while back to tour Sheridan as well. And Sheridan, as you know, is a drug treatment program. And I didn't know what to expect when I went in it. But at the end of the day, I had a meeting with the warden, and something that he told me kind of stuck in my mind. And he was saying that the important part of this whole program and the success is based on the family being a part of the treatment and the program. And so, again, when I met with the mayor and he explained that obviously many of the females here and their family are close to Chicago, I know that you have heard it today, but I do believe that the family is a very important component of the rehab in integrating people back into the district. So again, thank you for letting me say that. I know that the state has hard choices. We talk about it all of the time in many of our meetings. What you're doing is a tough job. So again, I thank you for being here today. And as you're kind of going through this journey and figuring out what these hard choices, I do just want to reiterate that the important part of being close to Chicago and the success of this is being close to the family. So again, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak.
Great. Thank you very much, Senator Rosen. The next panel is the business panel. Larry Vopel, Greater Livingston County EDC. Doug Pryor, Gundy Economic Development Council. Mike Van Mill, Economic Alliance of Kankakee County. Bob Ohlendorf, President, Dwight Area Chamber of Commerce. Gibbs Nielsen, Chair, Dwight Economic Development Commission. Steve Kim, RKJ Legal. If there's, let's see, that was six, so, oh, okay. Okay. Then if Stephen Wilkie would like to come up, that would probably be six.
Hello, my name is Larry Vopel. I'm the CEO of the Greater Livingston County EDC. Thank you for this opportunity. Appreciate it. While the DOC economic impact study illustrates the gravity of the situation, they did not include the vendor and contractor jobs at the prison in their job analysis. We contracted with Northern Illinois University to study the impact of the prison closure on job losses utilizing the same in-plan modeling software used by DOC's consultant. I'd like to submit that for the record after my remarks. We found that the number of direct job losses is actually 454, and the total number of job losses in the four-county region could be as high as 629 when you include the indirect effects. Add this number to the 1,700 jobs lost during the recession in Livingston County alone, we're talking about 2,329 jobs, or 12% of our entire jobs. The $53.7 million loss of gross regional product estimated by DOC's own impact study represents 5% of our entire gross regional product. Having $53.7 million evaporate from our struggling economy would be devastating to our rural communities. The facts speak for themselves. Let me summarize their report in one simple equation. The state would save $77 million in their budget by closing the four facilities in their report, but cost our state $102 million in gross domestic product and sales tax. We all understand the importance of balancing the state's budget. Why balance the budget by cutting programs that actually increase the state's domestic product and add stability to rural economies? Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My name is Doug Pryor. I'm with Grundy Economic Development. And again, thank you for the time. Building on that, I want to talk briefly.
Can you please speak into the mic? Thank you.
Sure. I just want to address briefly the employment impact on the region. The Dwight facility employs people from 77 communities around Dwight and 16 counties around Dwight. But the four most impacted counties are LaSalle, Livingston, Grundy, and Kankakee counties. This same region is one of the hardest hit during the recession in terms of employment impact and continues to lag behind the state in terms of recovery. In 2007, the combined unemployment rate for the four counties was 6.1%. In 2011, it was 11.5%. This is compared to a state rate of 9.8%. This margin has been consistent over the course of the last 5 years. We've been roughly 2% higher than the state in terms of overall unemployment. And, pardon, this closure would, of course, negatively impact what has been an exceedingly fragile recovery for us. We've lagged the state in terms of overall employment. We've been slower than the state in terms of recovery. But over the course of the last year, really 18 months, we've began to see a glimmer of hope. And the closure of this facility would certainly dampen that. So I would ask you to please reconsider closing the Dwight facility. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to be here today. My name is Mike Van Mill. I'm president and CEO of the Economic Alliance of Kankakee County. And on behalf of the Economic Alliance and the County of Kankakee, we wish to go on record opposing the closing of Dwight Correctional Facility. The Dwight facility's economic influence covers a vast region, including Grundy, Livingston, LaSalle, and Kankakee counties. The most recent unemployment or employment data released by IDS shows the aggregate unemployment rate for the four counties at 11.1% compared to the state rate of 9.4. Statewide, three of the four counties that I just mentioned top the state's unemployment list. No doubt the anticipated 629 jobs lost to the region will have a dramatic and negative long-lasting effect. Based upon the recent Northern Illinois University study, economic analysis of the closing, the region stands to lose $28 million in direct and indirect employee compensation and $16 million in business sales and output. As for Kankakee County, the impact is magnified. The February 2012 employment data shows Kankakee County to have the highest unemployment rate of any state MSA with 12.9%. According to corrections facility records, 76 correctional employees, approximately one quarter of all employees, reside in Kankakee County. The closing and loss of employment for our residents will compound an already devastating unemployment condition in Kankakee County. The Economic Alliance of Kankakee County respectfully requests the state of Illinois reconsider its announcement to close the Dwight Correctional Facility in order to maintain and stabilize a fragile and challenged economic region of Illinois. Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Hello, and thank you for the opportunity to speak. I am Steve Wilkie from First National Bank in Dwight. I have a written testimony, but after listening to the different comments, I would like to say just a few things or make a couple points. We're in a small bank, small community. I think the small community is the last bastion of mom-and-pop stores and businesses. We're owned by three families, and I look around our community, and that is very much the norm. One family, one generation, or two generations. And I think this would dictate their future, if not their survival. I also feel that just with the politics that we've had and things in the last few terms, that this is a classic short-term approach to a very large and long-time lack of fiscal responsibility. This has been going on since I've been an adult in business, at least since 1978 or 9. I want to conclude that as a banker, I don't understand how we can rely on projections when Sheridan was 400% and $40 million off. I just cannot listen to this. I think you are the commission. I look to you for that responsibility to be fiscal and straighten our state's problems out. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My name is Bob Ohlendorf, along with being a lifelong resident of the Village Dwight and the owner of the Country Mansion Restaurant, I'm currently the president of the Dwight Area Chamber of Commerce. I'd like to thank you all for holding this hearing in Dwight today so that all interested parties have an opportunity to input regarding the Dwight Correctional Center. As business people, we understand possibly more than others the deep financial problems that the state of Illinois is in. We too struggle every day as business owners to balance our budgets, grow our revenue, while keeping costs down in the midst of rising expenses. I know you hear this at every hearing. You have been brought to the closing of the Dwight Correctional Center will have an impact on the regional economy, far beyond the loss of jobs and income to the employees and service providers. Sales to the rest of the small mom-and-pop businesses in Dwight will also be adversely affected. This is Dwight. We do not have a big box store like Walmart, Menards, and Walgreens. Our businesses are local, owner-operated stores such as Berta's Hardware, Zeke's Furniture Mart, and Doc's Drugs. According to the Northern Illinois study, the Dwight Correctional Center closure will eliminate 454 prison jobs along with 175 private sector jobs. We are a community of 4,300 people and a small county of only 36,000 people. We can't afford to lose one job, let alone 629. As I stated earlier, we are a chamber, the business people organization. We know the state is in a mess and cuts need to be made, but it makes no business sense to close a facility in an already overcrowded system. There are currently roughly 48,000 people incarcerated in a system designed for 33,000. Losing another 1,000 beds by closing Dwight makes absolutely no sense. And transferring jobs from one area of the state to another is not sound financial practice. Tough decisions have to be made in Illinois. We all know that. But priorities also need to be set. Dwight Chamber respectfully urges you to put Dwight back in the budget.
Thank you.
I first want to thank each and every one of you for allowing us to speak tonight and for your tough job and for the hour that you've been putting in, like 4 hours already. I'm Gibbs Nielsen, if I didn't mention that before, and I'm the chairman of the Dwight Economic Development Committee, and also I'm a businessman. And I just want to say the Dwight Economic Development Commission strongly opposes the closure of the Dwight Correctional Center. I know you've heard everything else before from different people. I've got mine written down. You can have it. I want to mention one thing. I wished that we could put some money back in the budget so we can keep us open. Second thing I want to mention, just on a different light, my father was the one that carried the roof for the correctional center. The slate roof that's on that, my father did that. So I've been around for Dwight in a long period of time, and I look forward to keeping it going. Thank you very much.
We commented on how beautiful that roof was. Are there any questions? Thank you very much for your testimony. Community organizations and other interested parties. Oh, I'm sorry. Number 8, Janice Lauritsen, Dwight Tourism, Dwight Main Street. David Ose, OSF, St. James Medical Center. Joan Bullard, Livingston County Board of Realtors, and Sarah Center, Well Center Drug and Alcohol Treatment Provider. Sorry, I didn't mean to. Thank you very much. Just go ahead and start.
As Executive Director of Dwight Main Street, I also represent tourism. I am speaking on behalf of
the
small...
Can you just please state your name?
Oh, I'm Janice Lauritsen. I'm sorry. I'm speaking on behalf of the small businesses in Dwight and their employees. Our businesses receive revenue from tourists. Route 66 runs through our community. The Mother Road was born in 1926 and may have been one of the reasons the prison was located in Dwight 4 years later. The opening of Route 66 made travel from Chicago, a short 75 miles away, easier for everyone, including law enforcement transporting inmates and their families coming to visit. Although more than half of the inmate population in Illinois comes from Chicago and Cook County, 15 of the state's adult correctional centers are located more than 200 miles away. An analysis done by Chicago Reporter shows those inmates closer to Chicago have much higher visitation rates. Dwight residents have more than 11,000 visits annually. By comparison, the visitation rate at Logan, 170 miles from Chicago, is 40% lower than Dwight. As you know, roughly 60% of the residents of the Dwight Correctional Center come from Cook County alone. Using the federal per diem cost of $46 per day, Dwight's 11,000 visitors would amount to $506,000 of annual sales for local businesses. And while this may not seem a lot in the scale of the state's budget, it's a lot to the town of Dwight. These tourism dollars are not addressed in the impact study done for the Department of Corrections. 78% of Dwight Correctional Center residents are moms. Moms depend on visits from their kids, and kids need a mom in their life. By closing Dwight, the state will put an additional burden not only on Dwight's businesses, but on kids and families struggling to survive with mom. Please don't place undue burden and hardship on the children of the Dwight inmates and destroy our community. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm David Oakes, President and CEO of OSF St. James John W. Albright Medical Center in Pontiac. We're the only hospital in Livingston County. We employ 495 professionals, 28 physicians. We operate in 9 different locations throughout the county to provide access to care. We take care of about 2,000 inpatients a year, 166,000 outpatient services, 13,500 emergency visits. So we think that we're an important service. And what I want to talk to you about is simply the ripple effect that this is going to have on key services in Livingston County, healthcare being one. You know, based upon estimates made by the Northern Illinois University and the Economic Development, not just our own, we can identify about $1.7 million loss in revenue for our healthcare services. This comes about through lost reimbursement, through additional increases in public assistance and charity care, and also from the standpoint that we will lose payments through the health insurance program that unemployed people will no longer have. For a hospital our size, $1.7 million is a tremendous amount of money. And we already provide $9.2 million in uncompensated care as of our fiscal year 2011 to the people of Livingston County. And being part of the OSF healthcare system, which provides $257 million of uncompensated care to the people of Central Illinois, you know, we are definitely feeling the impact. And this is just another ripple, another impact to us, because based on those figures I just told you, we also are anticipating a cut of 6% in our public aid rates, which do not cover the cost of care, and a 1% reduction from Medicare. And then also point out the fact that the healthcare industry, we have not received payment since July of last year for services provided public aid recipients in our county. Right now, OSF is owed nearly $100 million in back payments from the state of Illinois. And this is a tremendous load for us. Now, when you combine that with the closure of this facility and the impact and ripple effect it'll have on the businesses, including ours, it is a significant burden that unfortunately will be a casualty, not just for the hospital, but for the impact that will make and the changes we will have to make to cover our costs, and also the investment that we will have to defer in order to meet an operating expense. And then in addition, with economic downturn like this, especially in a smaller community hospital, a rural county, this impacts us in our ability to maintain professional staff, maintain physicians, nurses, therapists and technicians. So, you know, we asked the committee to look at this very seriously, because it's not just the prison and the employees affected there. It's the whole community and the whole business community that provides services to this area. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Good evening. My name is not actually Sarah Center, it's Sarah Carter.
Oh.
Okay. I'm a regional director for the Well Center, and I supervise substance abuse programming in the Women's Division. The women who are eligible for the Earned Good Conduct Credit Days by being in programming, the amount of Earned Good Conduct Credit Days that Well Center submits each fiscal year more than pays for our program in the general revenue. The research tells us that the two programs that have the greatest impact on reduced recidivism are substance abuse programming and education. Well Center's recidivism rates for women who successfully complete the program are very low, less than 10%. It is not for me to say whether Dwight should remain open or closed. However, I would like to speak on behalf of the women who are suffering with the disease of addiction and those who are also fighting their own battle with addiction as well as mental illness. Dwight has the only program for offenders who are mentally ill and addicts. It is federally funded. I have to wonder what will happen to those women under this plan. Many of them are homeless and victimized in the communities that we want to return them to, with no way to access the community services. These are women who may actively hallucinate, are disassociative or delusional, who suffer and struggle with post-traumatic stress disorder, and who experience flashbacks. I'm concerned for the welfare in this plan. The other issue on my mind is, of course, the children. In their formative years, that attachment to their mother is very, very important. Lack of that, as a former educator, can lead to developmental dysplasia, as well as a sense of abandonment and attachment issues. While the attitudes, behaviors, and beliefs of the addict are a mystery to those who have not experienced the horrors of this disease, I think we'd agree that it is better and easier for all concerned to help bring up the child in the most correct way rather than try to repair the damage once they reach adulthood. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We'd be glad to take your testimony. I just had a comment on Mr. Oles? On your comments, because we sit, can you hold on 1 second? I just wanted to comment on some of the things that you said and how they apply to what Senator Trotter said before, because that's one of our major issues besides what we're dealing with here, is the Medicaid problem. We've talked about the Medicaid reforms or problems and the pension reform. But right now, as your hospital is, so are all the other hospitals in the state of Illinois, close to 180 days behind in the payment cycle. And we have $8 billion in unpaid bills. And so all of this fits together with what we're addressing tonight. Is it's a hard time right now in the state of Illinois, because we want our providers also to get paid, as we want the staff people at the prisons to get paid also.
Right.
So we're looking into all of that.
And you're probably aware that, you know, the health care industry is trying to be part of the solution,
yes,
not just the problem. And certainly over the last 5 or more years, the Illinois Hospital Association and our member hospitals have worked to, you know, bring federal dollars into the state.
Right.
And through the tax assessment program, where we pay a voluntary tax,
right,
to bring in federal dollars, and those dollars go to pay for the health care of the citizens of Illinois, and $300 million of those dollars go to the general revenue fund for Illinois. So, you know, we have tried to be a major contributor and a major part of the solution.
We appreciate that.
Thank you.
Joan. There was one person who we don't think came up, Joan Ballard. Not here. Okay, thank you. Moving on to community organizations and other interested parties, we have Reverend Patricia Morton, Dwight Ministerial Association, Marilyn Hugh, the Church Women United, Helen Kim, Korean American Presbyterian Association of America. There's three others who put in today, Kathleen Jardine, Mark. I can't read that. And Augie Woods. If you're here and you'd like to come up, come on up at this panel. Okay. Oh, they submitted their testimony. Okay. Mark Indanzi. Okay. Thank you. Oh, so it's Gina.
Thank you. For
maybe here's somebody coming up. You can go ahead and start. That's fine.
Thank you for allowing me to speak. I'm representing Church Living United of Illinois. Now, it may seem like a small thing in a way, but when you get women from all over the state raising funds to build a chapel at Dwight, when Church Living United prior to that had no prison ministry, this was the beginning of the impetus for the Church Living United of Illinois to support prisons. And this is kind of a big thing for us, that we have this opportunity to support prisons, to learn about prisons, and to be there for the offenders. Also, I know that a chapel is a very, very important part of prison life. And a lot of prisons do not have chapels. And this is a very nice chapel. This has room for other groups, and it provides for one-on-one consultation. And I don't think that closing Dwight would be a good thing to lose this kind of connection. Thank you.
Thank you. The chapel was beautiful.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
My name is August Woods, and I was born in 1930, sir. I'm Chester, Illinois. I'm speaking in behalf of all American legions and the veterans of foreign wars involved in their memberships. I understand there are 69 veterans employed at this time. The closing would not only affect them, but many more employees who will have to move and seek employment, possibly in other states. We definitely oppose the closing of the Dwight Correctional Center. The veterans plead with this committee to save the Dwight prison. That's
thank you very much.
See how good these guys are.
Right.
Thank you.
Right. Thank you. Okay, our last panel. Employees. Don Bufford, or Bufford, psychologist. Sandra, or Bufford. Sandra Boakman, correctional counselor. Shane Long, correctional officer. Kim Krug, healthcare administrator. Reverend Christy Callahan, chaplain. Cheryl O'Brien, educator. And then I don't know if we have Mary Sigler, warden, retired. We can pull up another chair. Oh. That's a woman who gets the job done.
Hello, Madam Chairman. Thank you for allowing us to speak as employees of Dwight Correctional Center. My name is Dawn Bufford. I'm a senior staff psychologist 3 with Dwight Correctional Center. Dwight Mental Health Administrator and I have 20 plus years of combined experience working with mentally ill individuals. We have been the consistent core of the mental health team since 2006. Dwight Correctional Center is a unique and multifaceted institution providing multiple levels of mental health services, from chronic and severe mental illness to behavioral interventions. Some of the services that we provide are for the 500 or so intake offenders, all three levels of security, infirmary offenders with physical health problems, pregnant offenders, mentally ill offenders, crisis watch offenders who report suicide or homicidal ideation, and our range of illnesses includes psychosis, major depression, anxiety, grief, personality deficits, and anything within the DSM-IV manual. One of the things that Logan does not have are the trained professionals that we have at Dwight. Some of the things that need to be trained are for TRC, for enforced medications of psychotic offenders, for the offenders that cut and self-injure, for the ladies who say that they want to kill themselves and then do. You're well aware of the suicide rate within the prison system. Also, designated treatment therapeutic intervention programs that have validity. Those take trained professionals. And unfortunately for Logan, they do not have those there because of their level of offenders there. Medium security offenders versus the mentally ill, the segregation unit, and the infirmary. This training is not limited to but inclusive of our security staff, our non-security staff, and any area in which offenders come in direct contact with any staff. These programs were highlighted by the Rashaw team earlier in the year, by the Illinois Correctional Facilities when they visited, and we have been looked at as one of four institutions within Illinois for a Center for Excellence due to our varied programs. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Sandra Boykman, and I have worked for DOC for 17 years, literally my whole career. Being a correctional counselor is challenging, but I like it, and I feel like I make a difference in the lives of women at Dwight Correctional Center. Dwight makes a difference, too, which is why I'm opposed to the closing of this facility. Dwight Correctional Center is the closest women's facility to the northern part of the state, where the majority of inmates are sentenced before being committed to IDOC. Dwight is located close enough to Cook and its collar counties for families to be able to visit without undue hardship. The large majority of inmates sentenced to IDOC get released. Transferring these women another 2 hours downstate will essentially destroy the connection and bond these women have with their children and families. The price of gas, along with this distance for families attempting to transport young children, would be devastating. Dwight Correctional Center provides a multitude of programs for its offenders. There are drug treatment and dual diagnosis units, a dedicated mental health unit, state-of-the-art hospital facilities, sexual abuse programs, and an abundance of additional programs run by volunteers. Not all of these programs can be replicated at Logan. 2 years ago, this commission rejected the department's plan to close Kankakee MSU. You opposed that closure because it was a unique facility for women and provided specialized care. Now the governor is closing more facilities for women. Remember that Kankakee was open when DOC was sued over lack of access for women to programs in lower security settings. Closing Dwight and its programs is an injustice to female offenders. It also opens the state up to another lawsuit. The IDOC website states that, and I quote, "The agency is committed to operating a safe and secure prison system, enhancing prison-based treatment and prevention programs, and the successful reentry of inmates into society, which helps to reduce recidivism," unquote. The proposed closures and cuts directly contradict this statement. Closures don't enhance prison-based treatment and prevention programs. It certainly will not reduce recidivism. I respectfully request that COGPA oppose the closure of Dwight Correctional Center. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Correctional Officer Shay Long. I've been at Dwight since 1998. I'm strongly urging you to oppose the closure of Dwight Correctional Center. This closure would be detrimental not only to displaced workers, but the impact would be substantial on families, businesses, schools, and the overall safety and security of the state. Dwight is very unique, being the only maximum security female prison and the only reception and classification center for females. The loss of programs and services that have taken us years to develop would be devastating to the female population. This, in turn, would directly relate to increased crime rate and safety concerns within our communities. These programs and services are a necessity due to the already high recidivism rate. Closing Dwight will put the whole state prison system at risk. DOC plans to lay off all Dwight employees by August 31st. By then, DOC will have had to simultaneously move 2,000 female offenders from Dwight and Lincoln to Logan while moving half of Logan's male offenders to Lincoln. The remaining 1,000 male offenders, as you heard, will be spread throughout other state facilities. Due to DOC laying off all staff from facilities it is closing, there will not be increased staff at the other facilities to handle this strain. The increased number of inmates will now be guarded by fewer number of staff in a system that is already extremely overcrowded. Dwight has a number of gender-specific posts, and over the years, we have built our female staff to cover these posts. Logan is a male facility that will switch to female, but only has 24 female officers compared to 95 at Dwight. The 24 at Logan will work massive amounts of overtime just to cover these posts. See, I'm not just an officer. I'm a husband and a father who came to Livingston County 13 years ago to be closer to my employer, settle down, and eventually start a family. Now, unfortunately, I've had to explain to my wife and children that we might have to move and that their stable, structured life just might have to be interrupted. Questions of when, what about my career, our church, our friends, and why do we have to move so far from family have already begun. All I can tell them is be positive and comfort them with, I'm not giving up, we'll get through this, and we are not going anywhere. So once again, I ask you to oppose the closure of Dwight Correctional Center and refuse a budget that doesn't include Dwight Correctional Center in it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Can I make note of something? I'd also like to make a comment. Director Godinez, earlier when he spoke, had made several comments about new admissions and the amounts of new admissions, and that's how they were basing budget on new admissions. They were down and this and that. I don't think he also didn't take into consideration that 54% of inmates in Illinois come back. They're not new admissions.
Hello. My name is Kim Krug, and I'm the healthcare unit administrator at Dwight. I have 26 years of service to the state of Illinois. We provide several important services at Dwight only. For example, we have dialysis on site 3 times a week. We have an OB-GYN doctor that comes in twice a week and cares for anywhere from 15 to 50 pregnant ladies. We have physical therapy on site 3 times a week. We transport a lot of the offenders to UIC in Chicago for several specialty medical needs. We also have mammography on site. Dwight has effectively been managing all of these difficult conditions for years. No other female prison has, and there's one reason for that, and that's your staff. They are a professional, dedicated, and competent team that took years to build. Recruitment into the Department of Corrections for medical professionals is very difficult. It's a high liability area, very specialized area of medicine, and in fact, it can be dangerous. Dwight also started a hospice program in October of last year, and we actually took female offenders and taught them how to care for other offenders at the end of their life and be by their side when they're dying. All of this is going to be lost with the closure of Dwight Correctional. The staff are not transferring down to Logan. They have responsibilities here. I cannot give you monetary value on this team because they are priceless. I urge you to keep Dwight open.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Reverend Christy Callahan, chaplain at Dwight Correctional Center. Because Dwight's the only maximum security prison for women in Illinois, the pastoral issues that I regularly encounter there simply are not seen at medium or minimum security institutions. Problems specific to women whose sentences are over 20 years, and especially for those whose crime is violent and or murder, and who are sentenced to life. At least 3/4 of my pastoral counseling sessions are with women who have committed murder, and therefore require many more sessions than the standard 3 to 4 visits generally offered for pastoral counseling. Long-term pastoral counseling relationships would not be typical for a minimum or a medium institution,
yet are crucial for women with life sentences, and there are many reasons why this is crucial. Most significantly is the distorted sense of self and other these women grow up with, leading to murder and violent crimes as an option. Then there is the huge guilt they carry for their crime. In many instances, although they have taken a life, they have also often borne life. They are mothers who feel tremendous guilt and conflict that they have abandoned their children to be raised without protection sometimes within the system. They face old age, illness, and death behind prison walls. We have several hundred volunteers who come to Dwight, mostly from the Chicago area, who come into the prison to minister to the women. And each week we count often up to 500 women who participate regularly in our religious programs. These women require specific types of programming, just not possible if they were combined with those at, say, Logan, for example. I'm concerned that pastoral programming would be woefully inadequate for the population currently served at Dwight. In fact, there are very few programs like ours in the country that address the needs of female offenders serving life sentences for violent crimes. It's a process that requires intense pastoral programming led by clergy highly skilled in multiple areas such as psychiatry, domestic violence, biology, theology, and pastoral counseling. Absent of an environment that specifically targets their issues, these women will be a marginal concern in programming decisions. If the American penal system is not just about punishment, but also strives to actualize the ideal of rehabilitation, even for its most violent criminals, then it's absolutely a moral imperative to keep Dwight Correctional Center in operation.
Thank you.
Hi. My name is Cheryl O'Brien. I'm an educator. I've worked for the state for 20 years. And the Department of Correction for 13 years, the last two being at Dwight. We have a strong educational program at Dwight. We offer adult basic education, which is a stepping stone to the GED program. We have GED classes and offer GED testing quarterly. I am proud to say we have a 90% pass rate. We have career tech classes to help the women build skills they will need to find employment. Dwight also has a women-oriented vocational program, which includes cosmetology, commercial cooking, computer technology, and dog grooming. Related to the dog grooming program, we have a program where the offenders train service dogs. This is a partnership with the organization called PAWS. In contrast, Logan Correctional Center's major prison industry is furniture making, which is unlikely to help female inmates with job placement after release. As a teacher, you get to know the women in your class. They often tell you a lot of their personal affairs. You hear when their kids are doing well or when they have problems. You also know when they are expecting a visit. When the inmates have problems, and especially when they aren't in touch with their children, it really affects their schooling. They have trouble paying attention. They tend to be grouchy. They get in arguments that sometimes end in physical confrontation. If they are expecting a visit and that visit doesn't happen, for example, when the weather turns bad, they can barely concentrate in class. Once they get this visit, they are a whole different person in the classroom. They'll tell me they were able to see their kids and that they shared with them what they are studying, and it is often the same thing that their child is working on in school. It gives them pride to have something to share with their family that is positive. It really helps the women strive toward their goals. They and their children get a sense of how education can improve their lives. Dwight's location makes it much easier for families to visit. We are a maximum security facility, but we have the highest visitation rate in the prison system, 11,000 visits annually. By comparison, Logan, 170 miles away, is 40% lower. The distance to Logan is detrimental to keeping families connected. Family connection is a vital link to the success of offenders turning their lives around.
Thank you.
Madam Chairman and Committee, my name is Mary Sigler Quigley, and I am a retired Department of Corrections employee and a prior warden at Dwight Correctional Center. In addition to that, I am a citizen of this community. I prepared a two-page report that I'm not going to go through because basically all of you have covered those things, and I don't want to sit here and repeat it again. What I'm going to do is speak to you from my heart. And my heart tells me this is not right. The reason it is not right is because there's a spirit at Dwight that cannot be replicated at Logan. And there is a cost to trying to replicate that. I am here to tell you that I want you to look at three things. I want you to look at the cost of converting Lincoln Correctional Center to a female facility. Okay? That was a very costly event. It took a lot of retraining and reprogramming of staff that were used to dealing with males. These are females. We do not treat our little girls the way we treat our little boys. Okay? That does not happen. So therefore, in a penal institution, when you're converting a male facility to a female facility, there is a lot of retraining and redrafting of the way people have to think. You also have to look at the physical changes that actually have to take place at that facility. And believe you me, I believe they are very flawed when they came up with the dollar amount, because I think it's going to take a lot more money than that to convert that facility to where it can house females. Lastly, they told you that it was $16,000 to house a male inmate at Logan, and it was $34,000. I heard the question asked, but I really never heard the right answer, or even an answer to what is that additional money for. Well, I'm here to tell you that dollar amount is going to follow to Logan. It has nothing to do with Logan Correctional Center. It has to do with the cost of incarcerating a female offender. And I can tell you a majority of that cost is because of their medical issues. So please take all that into consideration, because you cannot transfer the spirit of that staff, the spirit of the location, or the spirit of this town to Logan. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions of this group? I think we've gone through all the panels. I want to again say thank you to the Dwight High School for allowing us to host this hearing here tonight, and thank all of you for your comments and your testimony. It's extremely important to all the members of CAGFA and to the other elected officials that were here. I'd also like to say thank you to all the staff for the time that you've spent here and your dedication and compassion. It certainly came through in all of your testimony, and that's extremely important to us also. I want to thank the advocates and the business and all the interested parties. Oh, excuse me.
I filled out a form tonight to speak. Oh. My name is Karen Harms. I'm an educator at Dwight Correctional Center.
All right, go ahead.
Go
ahead, I think we had called.
I hired in on June 1st, 1999. I possess a Bachelor of Science degree in Corrections Criminology, which I earned in 1976. Teacher certification followed when I turned 40 years old. Previously, I was employed for approximately 5 years at a middle school as a teacher's aide for a learning disabled classroom, and after that, as an educator on the mental health unit of a nearby hospital teaching adolescents for another 5 years. Realizing that I am where I'm supposed to be has been an insightful journey. My students, I am sure, would tell you that I do not just teach the five academic subjects and life skills, but also social skills, patience, and possibilities. My first mission at Dwight was to beautify the entrance to Jane Addams Hall, the education building. I am positive that some thought I was crazy. It came out of my own money. However, witnessing the apprehension, then enthusiasm, and ultimate pride of my students as they dug, planted, mulched, watered, and weeded those flowers could be compared to any one of them earning an A on a classroom assignment, project, or test. These I have also witnessed. I take great pride in saying that flower fever now rages over the whole institutional grounds. Some might even say it's a healthy competition. To love teaching does not mean that it is not challenging. Success at Jane Addams Hall can be directly attributed to a team effort. Our staff works on the premise that knowledge, a positive attitude, and motivation will allow accomplishments. Dwight cannot be replicated. Please keep it open.
Thank you very much. I'll just finish briefly with the thank yous that we were on to the advocates in the business and all the other interested parties, to all the elected officials from all the counties, municipalities, and towns that came to speak, to the staff of CAGFA, who's been so good, and to all the commission members here and to the other elected officials. Some of us have been in hearings for almost 11 hours now today. So we appreciate everyone, and thank you again for coming tonight. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, I will announce the future facility closure hearings for those that are interested. Westside ATC is April 10th, 10 o'clock at the Blandick Building. Tinley Park Mental Health Center is April 10th, 3 o'clock at South Suburban College. And Murray Developmental Center is April 20th, 3 o'clock p.m. at Centralia High School. Thank you.